Live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, your call in number is 605-562-3140, and our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you could send it to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to be reading verses 10 through 20. So Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 20. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with the truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayers and supplications in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. And for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 20. And, you know, to take on the whole armor of God brings us back to the Word of God. The Word of God is the law of God, and the law of God is common law. Okay. Let's see where we're going to start tonight. I've got a few things I want to talk about. Committees of safety and grand juries. That's what we here at National Liberty Alliance are building and working on in a race against time, I may add. Time is short to save America. And we don't have much time to get communications going. Some people seem to think because we've been talking a lot about committees of safety that we kind of set aside the grand jury thing and that we're not filing papers or doing other things of that nature. Nothing could be further from the truth. We're still writing papers. We're still doing we're doing habeas corpus, as we just done a few recently, and we are working on a couple of papers going into the court, which, by the way, we need money to send out. The next two papers that are going to be going out, extremely important papers, really, really important papers from my perspective. But these papers need to go to all of Congress. We've tried sending to Congress by sending it to their main mailing address and enlisting the names of all of the individuals. And they've returned that, telling us that we have to send it out to each individual. They don't do that. They won't make the copy and deliver it. So we have to send to all 540 congressmen and senators. And so that's 540 envelopes with the necessary paperwork in there, which we have to pay for, of course, the mailing and the envelope and the toner and the paper and the time printing it and putting it all together. Plus, we also want to send this very same paper to the governors, all 50 governors. And I think it's an extremely important message. I think once we get that in motion and send it out and read it online, I think people will agree it was a very important message. It's another message, again, planning for the big event, and the big event being that when they pull the monetary plug, because that's going to cause chaos across the nation. They're working hard, you know, to get something going here, but that's their ace in the hole. I think they're a little nervous about pulling it because I think they realize they're not ready. I also believe they're getting a lot of pushback from a lot of places. Look, it's like trapping a rat in a corner. Eventually, it's going to bite you. And that's where we're at. We're trapping that rat in that corner, and it's going to bite us. So what does that mean? You know, ultimately, it means communications go down. And if communications go down, that's our strength. I mean, where are we if we cannot communicate? Where are we if we cannot get together and in some place and talk and get the message out and discover what's going on around America if we're all operating in the dark? Where are we if we cannot communicate to know that things are going good over here and good over there? And let me keep pressing towards the mark here because I'll make it good over here too. You know, to know that people are doing good things in their counties, in their states, to know that they're having success, to know that they're holding back the enemy, to know that they're putting forth righteousness and getting the power and the authority of the people in place, to know that that's happening is, in itself is power. Therein is the Committee of Safety, and therein is the ham radio that we're trying to put everything together. We're kind of behind the eight ball on the ham radio, and we've been extremely, extremely busy doing so many different things. But the ham radio, I wish to have had up to this week, but it didn't happen. I'm going to intensify on this tomorrow and try to get this ham radio system up and going. Where people can go and buy, affordable radios and handheld radios and be able to listen in to whatever it is we're doing nationally. We're planning so that we will once the communications go down, we will be online on ham every day at a certain time on a certain station. But there's a lot of uniqueness to this radio that we're trying to pull together. It's just got so many fascinating abilities and of communications, not only nationally but locally. And we want to talk more about that, but again, I'm not in a position to be able to talk much about that. I want to first get the page up where people can go and look at these radios, start buying them, and start getting ready. We're also looking for people in each county that's already existing, that are already set up with ham radios. They're there for the emergency. That's their purpose. That's why they're ham radio operators. And they communicate a lot of different things. And to some degree, some of them are communicating things right now over ham radio concerning the emergency at hand that we have at this moment in time, which is this new world order insanity trying to destroy America, to destroy the world, to destroy liberty, to destroy all that which is good, to destroy we the people. These people exist, and once they become aware of us, and that's the key, what we have to do is make them become aware of us, and we can work together because we're a network also. And we could network every single county and every single state across the nation into this system. So we are building committees of safety, but do not think by any means that we are setting aside what we're doing in the courts, setting aside the grand jury process and movement. By building this process of the committees of safety, by getting people back into the system, into the political powers, to take the authority and the power that these two private associations called the Republican and the Democratic parties have, to take that power away from them and get the fear of the elected individuals into the people, the fear of the people. You know, when the government fears the people, that's when you have liberty. When we fear the government, we have tyranny. We must continue to build these things. And the plan or the strategy ultimately is many-fold here. We started off with the committeeman process here at National Liberty Alliance. That was where we began, because that's where the power and the authority is or was controlling our elected officials. But they have such a tight iron fist on that process, we can't even budge in there at all. You can't make any dent to take back the power from trying to become an elected committeeman and getting the message out, getting enough people in to do this. It's an uphill battle. It's an uphill fight. It just we tried it for years, and we couldn't do it. We even did, that's when we took it into the courts and we discovered the court process and what was going on there and the problems there, and of course the United States versus Williams and the understanding of the strategy of what we have now, which is to take back the power and the authority through the courts. So that has not changed. We have moved all of our focus towards that part of the process, which is, again, the grand jury process. But we have not forgotten the committee man. We've always left it aside, knowing we're going back to that, because people need to be taking power in the political realms. And again, I've mentioned this numerous times, but let me talk a little bit about some of this stuff. My county alone, here in Dutchess County, New York, we have 248 committeemen in our county alone. 248 committeemen. They are supposed to be controlling the entire political process of this county and whatever say they have on the next other political levels up, the other political subdivisions, the assembly, the Senate, and so on. But we don't, because it was taken over by these party bosses. But in any event, we need to take that back. And we had discovered in time, as we were looking at this Committee of Safety, that the Committee of Safety is the committee man. That was the process our founding fathers used, the power and the authority, the decision-making. Who's going to be partners in this, who's going to be partakers in this particular conversation or that one concerning, you know, coming together to create a nation, and how we've chosen our people to go forward to, debate the Constitution and eventually vote upon it and then bring it out to the people of the states and so on. United States of America finally was birthed in 1789, and the Constitution became officially the Constitution for the United States of America, and George Washington was elected the very first president of the United States of America, and the Committee of Safety morphed immediately into what we know today as the committeeman. And that's how we're going to take the committeeman process back. The Committee of Safety has always been a avenue or a venue to be able to be used for the process of dealing with an emergency on the local government end. That's how our founding fathers started it. It started in 1760, I believe, and dealing with the problems that they had with their centralized government, I guess you would call it, which was Britain, you know. We had a local government here, and people was run by local people. Of course, they had people that paid more allegiance to Britain than they did to the Americas, but nevertheless, or the colonies. But nevertheless, they were there, and the people had a lot of control over it, but they were being terrorized by the, sort of like the federal government, by the British government. And so we started to take control on the local level, which is where we have to be. That's where all power resides locally. Think not it resides in Washington. It resides locally. For if the people have the power locally, we decide what goes on in Washington. And not all those Washington insiders and elitists and New World Orderists, whatever you want to call them. We get to decide. So we have to take it back. Now, we realized by building the committees of safety across the nation, this was a much easier way to get people in the liberty groups to come and look at National Liberty Alliance and actually decide to join up. A lot of liberty group people, they don't join up because they see we're all about the courts and the judicial process. And as far as they feel, a lot of people, they feel that they do not adequately understand the system and the process to be part of this. So they kind of just let it go and they don't join us. Well, we're given a boots on the ground type of thing. The committee man process, they understand. Committees, they understand. The power and the authority of the people coming together in the committee and dealing with your sheriff and the local governments, they understand that. It's just that they've been speaking to their local governments, but not getting anywhere. They have no power or authority to make their way through. And they're addressing the wrong agendas. I mean, you know, we all have the same agenda, and that is ultimately to save America. We all see how to do that in a different way. You know, we have to get rid of this, and we have to get rid of that. You know, you got Agenda 21. We have to deal with that, you know, and there are so many problems out there, and there is no organization, and there is no one force moving forward to take back the control collectively that brings these people, our servants, to any kind of a fear of the people. So we have to, and I've been waiting for years. I've been in the movement for a very, very long time. Actually, I started back in 1999 with We the People. But it really became intense and involved and, you know, on almost a daily basis with the Ron Paul movement back in 2007. And then it sort of morphed into the Tea Parties and all of the different liberty groups from there. And there were always other liberty groups that were surfacing also. And, you know, but anyway, I've always been waiting or hoping for someone to come up to bring the people and organize the people across the nation and bring them together in one accord so we can make a difference. And I've seen a couple of different organizations come by, and they seem to be organizing America, but every one of them was hijacked. None of them accomplished any goals, and they were just hijacked. I'm trying to think of some of the names of these things, and I can't even remember, probably because I don't want to remember, but I just can't even remember them. But I remember there's one big organization trying to pull all the two Tea Parties together. And all of a sudden, they came up with a whole bunch of money, you know, and they had these buses, and they were doing these tours, and they were doing all kinds of stuff. And then when we started to participate with them, they were coming to take control, just like a political party, you know. They've already been taken over, and they were trying to take over the Tea Party movement. And we've seen this on people running for office, especially on the higher levels, people trying to hijack the system, claiming that they're Tea Party leaders, and, you know, they to get our vote and all that other bull. Baloney. But in any event, we discover right now in this point in time, we at National Liberty Alliance, which is still a grassroots movement and still encouraging the power and the authority of the people to step up, to become educated, to get into the communicating with each other and taking power, taking authority and doing what has to be done. And we've been blessed with a certain few visions to understand what needs to be done first, okay? And we need to take back the courts. That's first and foremost. Even more than the political process, we need to take back the courts. Whoever controls the courts controls the nation. That is the main, that is the helm of this ship, the United States of America, whoever controls the judiciary. And we've been teaching these things for quite some time. But the committee man or the committee of safety thing is something that will build us the membership. It'll prepare the people to gather together on a local level, okay, in the counties. That's the word I'm looking for, in the county levels. And that's the key here, coming from every one of these towns in the county level, because when we take power and authority in the courts, there'll be a vacuum in those areas. And we need to fill that vacuum. You know, it wasn't so clear to us not long ago, but now that's more clear than ever. We need to be able to fill that vacuum. We need to be able to fill that vacuum with people who understand what we're doing and working together with us to bring honor, justice in America, honor and justice back to America. We need the people to be able to take the helm. We need to take back the... I got confused there on that. I guess someone was pushing some buttons. We need to take back, be prepared on a local level to take back the power, the authority. But look, this also sets us up for critical mass. We're looking for critical mass. The day we hit critical mass, we will know it. And when we hit that, and we're very close to it, the energy is building. You know, we can see it in our rankings. We can see it in our membership. We can see it in the people becoming involved. And so it's coming. It's there. It's building up. It's ready to break forward, break through, and just take control. But it requires a lot of people coming in. And this is what the Committee of Safety is going to do. It's going to provide for that influx of people. And all the people involved right now, which are thousands of people that are involved here, all the people right now, we will be the stability. We will be, we're preparing, we're becoming educated, we're becoming aware, we understand the principles and to trying to maintain those principles and to bring the governor of the universe into our courts, back to where the way it should be, which is common law in our court system. And in the process of bringing that membership in, we also will get a lot of people that will start to see what we're doing on the judicial side of things. And they will want to become more involved in there than they will with the committeeman thing. But as far as the Committee of Safety is concerned, every member of National Liberty Alliance needs to become a member within their local Committee of Safety in their county. They must become a member because we need to take control. You don't need, if your mind focus is on really working more with the court system and you're busy working in that, that's fine. You don't need to take a leadership role, but you do need to be involved in your local Committee of Safety. When the emergency comes, your voice is needed, the voice of reason, the voice that's going to bring back the message of honor, justice, and mercy on the local level and to our local servants. The voice of reason that's going to discuss the power and the authority of the sheriff with the sheriff and the local governments. We are needed there, and we're not asking the people to move over to work over into the committees of safety and set aside what we're doing here in the judicial process. Far be that from it. Far be it from us. So, but we will be getting more membership. We need four administrators in every county. That's a little over 15. There's about 15,000 people across the nation. We need four people in every county that's going to take up an administrative role. We need probably 100 people, maybe, in every county on the committeeman side of things, on the Committee of Safety. Not hard to accomplish considering the infrastructure that we have here at National Liberty Alliance. We have the infrastructure. 2 weeks ago, we started to really press forward on building, getting the committees of safeties going in every single state of the union, an active group of people in every state to get moving. And our first meeting, which I think was 2 weeks ago, maybe even 3 weeks, I don't remember, but a couple of weeks ago. And at our first meeting, we had 16 states on board. By the time we got to our second meeting, we had 48 states on board. And we have the listing of those people right here at National Liberty Alliance. You should be looking into this thing and making contact with these people, you know. So if you go to the committee, the COS on the blue line up there on our tabs, and you highlight the director of the COS and come down and click on Saving America, you will find the people that are building committees of safety here in your state. And we have numerous people in numerous states that are connected to this. And you need to get involved in your state. You need to get communities of safety in your county, And you need to make sure that your sister counties have committees of safety. And the county all the way across on the other side of your state has committees of safety because there's safety in numbers. There's power in numbers. United we stand and divided we shall fall. We have to become united. We have to become unified. And we have to remain grassroots. You are in control. The people in your neighborhood, in your county, they are in control. All power is local. That's where it has to come from. We the people. But we have to do this with principles. We have to do this honorably and bringing justice forward and also considering mercy at all times. And that's what we teach here at National Liberty Alliance. So we are not moving from the judicial process over to the political process. We are putting a lot of time into the political side of things, which really isn't the political side of things. Really, it's preparing the people to get the committees of safety, to prepare for the safety of the people during the coming emergency that is coming. It is coming, and it is closer than we realize. I do believe it's going to be this year. And when that rat is trapped in that corner, whether they intellectually think it out and say we're going to do it on a certain date or not, when that rat gets trapped in that corner, it's going to pull that plug. And all hell is going to break loose, not only in the United States of America, but around the world. Because these people are hell-bent on controlling every aspect of yours and my life. And they're sick people. They're insane people is what they are. In my opinion, it runs in their bloodline because it is a bloodline thing that these people are involved with. It's families. Just a couple of hundred families controlling the entire world. Anybody who's been looking into it understands what I'm talking about. Nevertheless, there's a monetary collapse coming, and it's coming to your neighborhood, it's coming to your county, and it's coming collectively to all of us at the same time. And when communications goes down and organization is no longer there, we're going to feel hopeless and helpless. We have to stop that from happening. We must communicate. We must organize. We must build. We must make haste. We have no more time. Get involved in a committee of safety now. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your neighbor. You owe it to we the people. You owe it to all those who don't understand what's going on. You owe it to all those who are not aware of National Liberty Alliance. You have heard the message. You understand the problem. You understand what needs to be done. And what are you going to tell your children if you don't do it? We don't have a choice. Time is short. We need money. We need more people. We need leaders. We've got thousands of members. We need thousands of leaders. In the judicial process alone, we need 15,000 people. We need to fill these vacancies. Now, we don't have to fill them all at one time. Believe me, when critical mass comes, there'll be an inpouring. People will pour into it, but we need enough within the infrastructure to control the attitudes of the people. People will be coming in for vengeance and not understanding it, not educated yet, haven't really sat down and thought about this yet. We need to deliver to them and require to them the same thing that is necessary to win, honor, justice, and mercy. And only then will God bless us that we might win. Only then may God bless us that we might win. But it is our duty, whether we win or not, to do the right thing. It is our duty to step up and be honorable people, to be just people, and to be a merciful people. This is our duty. Win or not is irrelevant. That's what's required of all men. God will not turn a blind eye to men like that. I know he will not do it. So this is our job. 48 active states. We have two states inactive. Anybody from Wyoming, anyone from Idaho, those are the two states we do not have a leadership in working to build committees of safeties within every county within their state. We need leadership in those two states. And we need to build more leadership in the other 48 states that we've got going. Again, let me say again, everybody should highlight COS on our blue line, committees of safety, COS on the top, or blue bar, that tab. Come down, click on Saving America. Connect with the people in your state. Let them know. Give them your information, your phone number, your name, your email. Share with them. When are they meeting next? Or what are we doing to organize the state? You should be having committees going out telling the story from county to county within your state and working together doing this. Some people can articulate well, some people not so much, but it doesn't matter. We all work together and you support, you travel together and do what has to be done. When I traveled New York, I didn't do it alone. We went with a small group of people, usually the same people, going and working together, setting up the equipment, bringing the message, and talking with the people, and moving to the next county, and so on. And that's what we all have to be doing. Time is no more on this. There is no more time for wavering. There is no more time for thinking the other guy is going to do it. You have a duty to do this. You also have a duty to support the work we're doing at National Liberty Alliance, not only physically, personally, by doing things. Some people can't help us financially. But a lot of people can, and they're not doing it. They need to do it. We you know, there is that concern, or a few people voice, you know, how come we're not doing the papers again? Because we don't have the money. We say, we don't have the money. $5 a piece is what we ask for everyone. $5 a month for each person that's involved with National Liberty Alliance, we'd have plenty of money. Some people can afford more, but $5 a month is what we're asking. Right now, we need people to just send any amount, because if we're going to send these next two papers, then we need some money. Okay, we have about 1,000 papers twice to send out. Let's see, 540 plus another 100 for the districts, that's 640, and another 50 for the governors, that's 7. So 700 times 2 is 1,400. We need papers. We need to send out. We need stamps. We need envelopes. We need papers. We need toner. And everything else is volunteered. Okay, but we need the money to pay for these things. Bills are still behind. You know, we're paid up on all bills right now, in the sense, but our pocket is empty. 1 week from now, the next Monday is going to be August 1st. Bills are due. We have nothing in the till. Nothing. Because we've been behind for 3 or 4 months. We have nothing in the till. We may have to start cutting back someplace so that we can just stay alive here. With all the membership we have, you'd think we'd have plenty of money. We don't have enough. Anyway, I'm not going to beat that horse to death, because you know what? Either we have the money and we pay the bills and we're here, or we don't have the money and we cut back here or there. You know, it doesn't. That's God's plan, ultimately. Whatever happens is going to be his will, no matter what. Our job is to do the right thing. That's all our job is. Hope that the best is going to happen. Trust that the best is going to happen. We got to do the right thing. Every moment in time is a moment of decision. There's not a moment in your life where you're not making a decision. Even if your decision is to go to sleep, you're making a decision. Okay? You have to make the right decision. You're going to go this way, you're going to go that way. You're going to do this, or you're going to do that. As long as we make the right decision every moment in our life, all is well. But if we don't, all is not well. We have to do this collectively. Okay, now, we also are building, this is extremely important. If we don't get this HAM system, this communication system up and start testing it out soon, we're going to run into more problems again, because if they pull the plug, no matter how organized we are, if we don't have communications, we have nothing. First order of business in war, cut off communications. Demoralize the hell out of your enemy. Bomb them. Just cause all kinds of chaos and problems and hassles. Just demoralize the hell out of them. But first order of business is cut communications. And as you're demoralizing the hell out of them, second order of business is to cut off any supplies. If the internet goes down and if the grid goes down, the grid's going down. Don't think it's not. It's going down. And that means the internet's going down. Communications is down and gone. We have nothing. So we have to get this communication systems up. We have the infrastructure. We can do it quickly. We are ready. In 3 weeks' time, we are ready, are working in 48 out of the 50 states. In 3 weeks' time, no other liberty organization is as well organized as that. None. There's none to compare to what we have the ability to do. And the key to this whole thing is we're still grassroots. Nobody has taken control of the helm for their own benefit. This is still a grassroots movement. Everything is for the benefit of the people. To deliver to them, to be National Liberty Alliance really is a facilitator, to organize, to communicate, to educate. That's all we do. And we lead the way with leaders, because you are the leaders. We come together, all of us across the nation, to lead in our neighborhoods, to lead in our counties, in our states, in our federal districts, to lead nationally and to do what has to be done to save this nation for yourself and your posterity, for your children. Look at your children tonight. And think about what we're talking about right here. Do not think you don't have the time, because you have the time, because there's nothing else more important than to save what you do have. It's to save the lives of your children and your posterity. Nothing more important than that. What good is the job that you need to go to and all the things you need to attend to if next week there is no job and there is nothing to attend to, because you'll be digging, looking for food and water and shelter and looking for a place that's safe. We need to be prepared. We need to do it now. And please do not think that we are not working on the judicial end of things. We are. We're ready to rock and roll with two more papers. It's in the workings right now. They could literally go out in the next week. One of them, anyway. And the other one, a couple of weeks. It just, they'd have to be separated a little bit. But without the money, they're not going anywhere. So they're just kind of sitting in limbo. But, you know, we are spending a lot of time talking about ham radios. We're going to continue to do that. We're going to spend a lot more time talking about committees of safety and organizing that. We're going to continue to do that. But we're also going to talk as often as we need to also about what we're doing judicially, what we're doing with the grand jury, the trial juries, to make sure the administrations are up and moving throughout this nation, that the good people have control of the helm. That's our focus. That's what we need to do. And we'll continue to do that. So if it seems that we're spending a lot of time towards one thing, it's just that at that point in time, it needs to be focused on that one thing. We're not forgetting anything else. Anybody that hasn't gone out to see the plan, you should get out to see the plan. Again, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight welcome, and click on the NLA plan. There's two videos there. If you haven't seen those two videos, you need to see those two videos. They lay out the plan, the political plan, the judicial plan. It brings them both together. One is required and necessary and empowers the other. They empower each other. And you cannot have the political without first having the judicial, because that's where the real power is. And I'll say that over and over again. Whoever controls the courts controls everything. It is not he who controls the money. It's he who controls the courts. They want you to think it's he who controls the money, because they control the money and they don't want you to think any further. It's the courts. I don't care. They can control every dollar in the universe. They don't control the courts. We can take them down, and we can take them down quickly if we, the people, control the courts. I don't care how much money they have. It's meaningless if we control the courts. So we need to do that. Ham radios, we need to get going. We need to get these two inactive states active, Wyoming and Idaho. Anybody from Wyoming, anybody from Idaho, we need you now. Get a hold of the national leadership here. Tell them you want to become, work with the leadership and begin the leadership in your states to get going with committees of safety. Thursday night meeting, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss more on the way of communications and on the way of organization of the committees of safety. So let's get together. Time is short. We will be giving a presentation down in New York City on the Committee of Safety this coming Saturday. For those who know about Pastor Manning, if you don't know who Pastor Manning is, go out to YouTube and put in Pastor Manning and watch some of his videos. Okay, we're going down to Pastor Manning's church. He's at 36 West 123rd Street, right off of Lenox Avenue. Saturday, July 30th. At 1 p.m., we want to unify New York City. New York City needs to come together in masses. They need lots of people involved in this. But that doesn't mean the people from Jersey can't come and listen to the presentation and become involved and support things, or Connecticut, or even the upper part of New York going up into Westchester or Rockland County. Come and get involved down in New York City on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They're going to have a service that morning. If you want to get in earlier for the service, I think the service starts at 11:30. So, but by 1 p.m., I think they end at about 12:30, sometimes 1. But we'll probably, the presentation will start at about 1. Try to get a little earlier than that, because it might start at 12:30. I really don't know. Right after the service, we're going to move into that. We're going to give the presentation on the Committee of Safety, and we need to organize New York City. They need to have a plan. I don't know what I can give them some ideas, and I come from New York. That's my hometown, New York City. So I can give them some ideas and thoughts, but they got to work out what their plan is going to be during this stressful time that's coming. We have to make this a soft landing. If we have committees of safety in most counties in America, and we have most sheriffs understanding their power and their authority and their duty to maintain through this time period that the Constitution continues to stand and never falter during this time period and after, If we got that going and local, enough local governments understanding the necessity and the power and the authority of the sheriff, and we the people together, working together, rolling up our sleeves to rebuild America again, then it'll be an extremely soft landing. It will not be a destructive landing with chaos, not knowing what's happening across the street or across the county or across the state or across the nation. We will know what's going on even across the nation, because we'll be talking about it every night through the ham. We need to be connected on this. Communications, organizations. And we need to be consistent about these things. And that's why people have to become educated. Everybody needs to be re-educated back into truth, righteousness, back into the processes of common law. Okay. I'm just looking to see if there's anything else I need to cover. I don't know, Gerard, you here? Have you got anything to add to any of this or any of the other leaders? We do have a welcoming video that we're working on. It should have been done, but we're held back from a few problems. But the last couple of days, I'm holding it up a little bit because I realize we have to get a little bit different message in there concerning where we're at with the committees of safety. Because when we started the message, we have the infrastructure to create and get things going. Well, since then, we've actually exercised that infrastructure, and we do have things going, and we do have 48 out of the 50 states moving. So we want to make that point. We need to give people hope. And, you know, when you know that you're not alone, because what can one county do? What can one group of people, one sheriff and one county, the local governments of that county, what can that one county do against such a massive enemy that we're up against? We need 3,000 counties. We need 2,000 or 2,500 counties is what we need. That's power, that's authority, and we're kicking butt, and we're going to take back America, and we're not going to fall. That's what we need to do. But if we don't have those 2,500 plus or 2,000 plus counties working on that level, then we don't have it. But when you have that, and you know that what you're doing here in your county is being done across the nation and across the river to the next county, when you know it's happening there too, that we're working, that's hope. That's power, and that's authority. And that gives us a lot. And we can have a very soft landing. Okay? Gerard, did you want to add anything, or Jan, or anybody?
I just want people to pay attention to some of the other stuff that's going on. You're covering an awful lot of stuff, but in the midst of all this, we have boots on the ground doing things like in the courts with the habeas corpuses and pressuring the judges. You know, the call out that the court watchers are going to do for New York City and Lydia, that's going to put a judge's feet right in the fire. That's what we're about. And they're going to be able to do it down there because it's going to be a lot of people on the ground, a lot of organizations, a lot of people going to show up in the courts. You see, in the sparsely populated areas, we have problems getting that many people into court. That's why places like New York City, they should be able to amass very quickly, because once the people understand and they show up in the courts and they start pointing their fingers at these judges that are violating and breaking the law and removing papers, and that's what's going on this week, this next 2 weeks, everybody's got to get on that phone. They got to make the call to the marshals. We're having an effect on them. We're having a big effect on them. And so we can't stop now, and this group of people down in New York City have picked up the ball. They're willing to be in the courts. Well, while they're in the courts, you could be on the phones. I'm telling you, that's what's going to have an effect, because they know every phone call they get, and faxes are good too, because faxes, they can't deny that they got. You know, it's like if you call, it's worth so many people. If you write, it's worth so many people. They know these statistics. You know, one letter is worth about 25 or 100 people. I forget what it is. They understand that this is what they understand, and this is what we have to do as a nation. We have to come together. And this is how you fight the Leviathan. Look, the biggest thing that this Leviathan has going for it is we comply, and they can stand up in our counties. The minute we stop complying, the minute we give them trouble in our counties, the minute they can't operate, they're done. You know, and it's a self-policing thing. If people stopped self-policing it, it would fail tomorrow. Tomorrow. If everybody just went into traffic court and said, I'm not guilty, I want a trial, they couldn't even do it. That's all it takes to take that stupid little court down that's sending people to jail over traffic tickets. It's just a matter of getting people together and having them cooperate in a movement. And that's what we are. We need to be that movement. And right now we have boots on the ground in New York City. We need to support that effort. That's going to point to this judge. They're calling for her prosecution. I don't know what's going to happen. Pay attention. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be exciting because you can start seeing results now. So that's all I want to say. I just wanted to give a little bit more of the practical things that are going on, you know, in between. And that's why we need all the other stuff that John talked about, your $5 a month, your committees of safety locally. Because, look, once something takes root, and like a brush fire, if you got your committees of safety already formed, you'll be able to take that on and carry it forward. Then it'll really move like a brush fire. So that's why you have to have that infrastructure, that skeleton crew in that can receive this and then turn it out to the people in the streets, and we can get on the phone and NLA will be filing paperwork. Even in the stuff out west, what we'll be doing is we'll be responding and filing paperwork, because they're saying a lot of stupid things, those judges over there, and we're going to respond to all of that. We're going to be doing writs of error and things like that that the judges are not going to be able to hold up to. That's going to give the people something to march into the courts with. So we're going to give them the tools, but they're going to do it themselves. So that's more of the vision that we're doing. I guess that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Gerard. Okay, look at everybody in National Liberty Alliance, and even if you're not a member of National Liberty Alliance, and by the way, we have a lot of people who are not members of National Liberty Alliance, yet they follow along. For whatever reasons, they don't join, but we've got a lot of people. But look at everybody, even if you're not a member of National Liberty Alliance, you should connect up with the Committee of Safety, find out what's going on. If you go up to the committees, highlight committees, okay, come down and you'll come to Courtroom Observers Committee, okay, and then join the Courtroom Observers group. Join the group. Get the emails that are going out. Understand that when the call goes out. And you don't have to go to the courts. We want more people calling the courts than going to, although we'd love everyone to go to the courts. But everybody can't go to the courts. Look at it, if you're living in Texas and you got a case over in New Jersey, obviously you're not going to go to the court. But you can get on the phone. You can make a phone call. And you can maybe send a fax. And they give you the information. The committee will give you the information, the name of the case, the name of the individuals, the phone numbers, everything necessary. If you're going to be on making a phone call, make a phone call. You get that information. If you're going to send a fax, get that information. If you could make it down there and write an affidavit for the individuals that are in trouble, get down there and write an affidavit. You know, let's intimidate them by being there, letting them know we, the people, are watching and we want justice back into this courtroom. Let's chase the devil out, you know, so to speak.
And, you know, you made an important point with the affidavits. The affidavits are very important because we will file them, and those are more nails in their coffin. They're not going to be able to hold up to. Look, at when you got 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people in a courtroom doing affidavits, they can't mess with that recording. They can't. The court recorder, they're always changing the information. They're not going to hold up. If the affidavit doesn't match, if you got 6 people saying this is what was said, they're not going to be able to go in and change the words like they're used to doing. And nobody, the reason they do it is because nobody's watching. So it's up to us to get in there and watch. And those affidavits are so important because they're going to get entered into the record. We're going to start putting them on the record. And they're a permanent record of what actually went on in the courtroom. That's why they get nervous when you're in there with a pen and a pencil. Makes them very nervous because they know that there's duplicate records of what went on. Very, very hard for them to do fraud at that point.
Right. Anybody who has an existing case going on, especially one where jail is in the vision of the possibilities here, and well, loss of your children or something, you definitely need to be getting a hold of the docket on a regular basis. I would say as much as every month, go get a copy of the docket. See what's going on, and make sure you're aware of whatever's happening in your case. Because sometimes things happen and they're not telling you, but it's on the docket. Why didn't you tell me, you know? The other thing is to have your case, every hearing that they have, documented by affidavits. And if you can, get a copy, you know, from the stenographer, get a copy, a written copy of what took place. You see, if they're seeing you taking the dockets every week, they're seeing that every month, they see that you're getting a copy of what's being said in the courtroom. They see that you're writing an affidavit of what took place in the courtroom and file it in the case. File it right in the case. File it.
Yeah, because
they see you doing those three things. They can't change the docket.
They change the docket. So if you have affidavits to back up, that's going to stymie their little game. And there's also a recording that will come into effect at that point. So that's why that's so important, because a lot of times the docket's full of lies. And so if you got a case, you better be looking at your docket to make sure that they're putting it down there correctly, because we've run into that where they don't docket it correctly. Okay. I yield.
Hey. Okay. So anyway, keep a monitor on your own case and get as many people as possible to come out to your case to write affidavits and continue to push back. So, okay, let's see where we're at here. I want to cover one last thing before I move over to Brent. And Brent might want to pick up on this maybe tonight or next week or something. But you know, we've had some conflict with some people understanding or agreeing on the terms of common law. And some people think that common law is not natural law. Common law is natural law. Common law is that which is common. It's law which is common to all men. And that's the law of nature, the law of God. Okay? That's common to all men, whether you like it or not. You're going to be held to that that judicial process, which is the run by the governor of the universe. But in any event, that's what common law is natural law. Now, there are people who would like to deceive us. England has created its own common law, but it's really statutory law. It's a mixed bag of a bunch of mumbo-jumbo or whatever, you know, a lot of precedences and maybe decisions from the courts and putting it all together, and they say, that's common law. Lawyers have written books. They bore me to tears. I know books have been brought to me. I've looked at PDF books that people have given me, and I start reading it, and I realize that it's written by bar lawyers usually, and really they're dragging us back down into the system, into the statutory side, okay, and it's just confusing. Look, common law is simple. It's common sense. It's having mindsets, really. It's understanding what due process is, and it's understanding what jurisdiction is. Those are the two keys, in my opinion, of any court case. You know, are you in a jurisdiction that has any authority over you? Are you in the right jurisdiction? Are you getting your due process, or are they denying that? Those are two key things. If you're getting due process and you're in your jurisdiction, which is the court of law, the law of the universe, the real law, you're in good shape then. You know, if you're guilty of something, then you're going to have to pay the piper. But you're in good shape if you're in that court, if you're in that process. And that's what we have to focus in on. So people get confused on the difference between common law and the common law of England. You know, in the sense that where they have brought it. And even here in the United States, I have talked with lawyers who told me what common law is this, that, the collection of these things, you know? No. And you know, something that's a precedence doesn't make it right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It has to be changed. It has to be corrected. We don't continue to build on our mistakes. We correct those mistakes. So, you know, I will never hear someone say, like, well, we're fighting a case right now. It's a tax foreclosure case, and we don't care about precedents. I don't care that they've been doing it for 150 years or 50. I don't care how long they've been doing it. They've been doing evil for 100 years or 50 years. They've been doing wrong, and we're going to correct it. That precedence of evil does not make it law. That's not what law is. You want to know what the law is. The Constitution is the law of the land. Article 6, that's the law of the land. And it brings into that the realm of common law through, ultimately, the Bill of Rights, which brings us to unalienable rights. That's common law. That's the law of the land right here. It's all about due process. It's about jurisdiction. It's about a court of law, truth, righteousness, justice. That's what law is. Anything or the other thing is something else. So anyway, I think I'm at the end of where I have to say anything, and I'd like to now bring Brent in. Brent, by the way, you're on mute. You're going to have to start.
John.
Yeah.
Based on our discussion earlier this week, I had asked Ollie to come in and talk about his experience visiting the court
in Portland
and Missoula, and he's here tonight ready to talk. Can we do him now?
Yeah, I did say that. I meant to ask you about that, that was, because I didn't remember it was Ollie. Yeah, Brent, hang on a minute, because Ollie's going to come on and talk to us for a short while and explain to us what's going on. Give us a brief of what Ollie's going to talk about, Jan. And have you unmuted him yet?
Yes, he's unmuted. He's online. He and Lindsay traveled up to the court in Portland. They attended the whole day session. They listened to the whole proceeding. Then they traveled down to Missoula, which is one heck of a distance, and they listened to the sentencing for Joe Robertson, who ended up getting a year and a half and $130,000 or $140,000 fine for building three fire ponds on his property. Typical injustice. So Ollie's prepared to talk on both.
We haven't done a habeas corpus for him? Is there any next friend for him? Can we find the next friend?
Well, one of the problems is he's going to be shipped out of state of Montana because there's no federal prisons there. So he'll probably go down to Denver.
Let's go to the court. Look, we go to the federal court where he's at and file a habeas corpus if we can get a next friend, and then we're going to call for all the people with National Liberty Alliance that's going to get involved and make phone calls when we tell them to make the phone calls to put the pressure to make this habeas corpus go forward with this ridiculous case. Yep. And look, if they can put you in jail because you dug a hole and put water in it, it's insane. That's pretty much what we're talking about, right?
That's right. You got it.
My goodness. Okay, anyway, go ahead. Let's bring Ollie in. Ollie, go right ahead. You got the mic. We'll mute up.
Okay, am I hot?
You're hot.
Okay, thank you, John. Let me tell you what, I've got a report. That two events like that in 1 week, that was a hard ride. I'm still regaining my strength and wrapping this whole mind around what actually happened. If during the story I paused a little bit, give me a few seconds to regain my composure. Like I said, it was very emotional. But I've been down some rough paths. This left me emotionally drained and physically exhausted. The list of inequities from the Monday hearing blended into the Wednesday sentencing and slipped into a bad dream. So if you want that list, consult one of those documenting all the atrocities. This report will tell the story and try to invoke some of the images and emotions from someone who was there. Lindsay Brewster and I traveled in excess of 2,500 miles on this hard ride, Colorado to Portland, and then next day east along the Olympia River. We saw some beautiful country. There's some beautiful country up there, and then to Missoula, and then back to Colorado. And at first the plan was leaving early Monday to Missoula. The sentencing for Joe, he's an old sailor. He's an old vet from my era and needed support. I wish we'd have known about this case long ago. He was one of those where the first one was a hung jury, but they got him in court again and hung him. But Monday was a very important day in Portland for Almond and Ron Bundy pretrial release hearing. And they desperately needed this release or ample time to prepare for the Nevada case, and they're still fighting Oregon also. So Friday, Lindsay called me and said, let's leave early Sunday morning, go to Portland also. Do you want? I immediately replied, if we don't, we will regret it forever. Now, Kelly's been out there in Portland. I've talked to her many times on the phone. I've worked with her. She has got one of the worst jobs there is. She is supporting the P3s. She goes in and visits prisoners on a daily basis. She has coordinated the letter writing. She has coordinated the phone call campaigns, the court observers, and the whole bit. Like I said, I had never met her personally. Lindsay went out there during Memorial Day or whenever it was. I forget what holiday it was, but spent some time with her. So that they had met personally, but I'd never met Kelly. And Kelly was in one of those periods of depression. You know how we all get in there where we get that feeling, the hopelessness, and get in a depression. She needed a big uplift. So we both talked to her on the phone before we left, and we said, hang in there, we'll have a surprise for you Monday. And we both wanted to tell her what was coming out, but we resisted that and didn't tell her. So we left early Sunday morning, and Monday morning, bright and early, we're standing in front of the courthouse in Portland and waiting for Kelly. There she uses a big parking building, a catty corner from the courthouse, and we're standing there, and I was sitting on the steps out of view, Lindsay says, there she is. So she spotted Lindsay from across the street and ran full speed with tears streaming down her face. And after hugging Lindsay, it dawned on who I was, and hugs all over again. And we had a video on Facebook, and I still can't watch it without crying. But I met many patriots that day, including Angie Bundy and her beautiful, well-behaved kids. That morning, Shauna Cox and others had a hearing for certain things, and for the first time, I felt the Luciferian evil inside a courtroom. But in reality, it was an evil circus of desperate fools, although I did feel divine presence. I have had direct conflicts, direct battles with evil ones, but I have never confronted the evil, the Luciferian evil, that strong. Went through that hearing, which is just a blur. Like I said, I don't remember the details. I was feeling the spirits and whatnot. But that afternoon, the U.S. Marshals playing the role of security were totally humble, and there wasn't much role playing. And that was a smaller courtroom with jury benches on the left. That they were full with attorneys, defense attorneys, and whatnot, spectators. The rear corner was filled, I think, with press and spectators. We were seated along the back wall on the hard benches. The prosecutors were seated on the left with their back to us. Almond and counsel were seated directly in front of us with their back to us. Ryan was seated on our right facing the courtroom and the jury box. Angie and her kids were sitting right in front of me, and I'll tell you what, she's beautiful, well-behaved kids. But upon seating, I sensed a huge spiritual presence and flooded with the emotions. No role-playing, no lies. Bare souls for this. And it's like a God stuck his hand down and says, this is my court. This is a court of records. I felt calm. And that we found out later that this was a charade of sorts. They had to throw out some bones. They had to appease the Bundy crowd. Because let me tell you what, these courts, they are under pressure. They had to release some pressure. Even the U.S. Marshals are under pressure. And don't think we're not making a difference with the court observers and the affidavits. We're making a huge difference. Like I say, when the cookie crumbles, those habeas corpus we got out there, they'll be very fruitful, and we can run with them. But this is actually was in place about time everybody was seated. They discussed about 3 points, which I don't recall vividly, about the Bundys in charge of militia, forming a big, huge resistance. Also, a huge weapons cache was falsely presented. Now, Judge Jones seemed to be on the Bundy side. He was curt with the prosecutors, you know, and they'd start with their mumbo-jumbo. I want answers. I want answers, you know. And he would interrupt them. And the defense requested 2 videos which is allowed. And so the first one started, and there's monitors all over for everybody to watch. The first video was Lavoie Finicum, and one of his and Ammon's first press concerts, explaining why they were there and what their goals were. Truths permeated the room, and instantly there was not a dry eye. Kids and adults openly wept, including yours truly. The judge started with folded arms, which gradually opened, and he stared quietly at the video. The prosecutor's demeanor slowly subsided as they scrunched deeper into their chairs. At a certain point, the whole truth was known to everybody. It was a relief, but at the same time induced an inner rage and repugnance for the disregard of humanity. There was an evil barrier between an innocent man and his family who had crossed many states hoping for the release of their daddy. I had an irresistible urge to stand and scream, "In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, let this father hug his children and wife, for God's sake. It takes a Luciferian-type evil to put children and families through this torture." Divine intervention. He said at 4:15 they did not want to continue past 5. He had a large spectator crowd, etc., etc. So he handed continuance until the next day. The court recorder told him there's no recorders available Tuesday. So he, with annoyance, he announced that Ryan was to give his plea and Alman wanted to take a witness stand. But he said, "Take your time." They let him speak to no interruptions. Ryan gave a speech so eloquent that you knew it was guided by angels and more truth was brought forth. Like I say, that this started off as a charade, and then it got out of hand because the hand of God come down and said, "This is my court." I had the chance to, the Almond looked around, I had a chance to give him a thumbs up and a big grin, and he thumbs back, and same thing as Ryan, I gave him a thumbs up, he was on the witness, they swore him in. He spoke of history of this nation, the Constitution, and the real role of the people and the government they instituted, of how they were not trespassers on the land the feds had false claim to. The whole truth was known at this time. Everybody in that courtroom knew the truth, the travesty, and the whole truth. The judge said he wanted to watch the other, the judge said he wanted to watch the other video and would render his decision in the morning. I know he did. He didn't have the guts to render his decision in front of the crowd, and that was just an excuse. But it was very emotional. And let me tell you what, I wish everybody in NLA that had a hand in this, that worked on this, would have been there and watched this. It was very spiritually enlightening. It was awesome. It was awesome. The whole truth came out. The Bundys had their day in court. They honestly did. Okay, I decided to return below, and Angie, her kids were in the elevator. I met her in the street, and the wife of Ryan. Beautiful kids. I think she's got 8 kids total, and from a toddler on up. And I looked around for Lindsay, and I didn't see her. I said, "Well, I'll go back down the street for more of the rally, flag waving, and all that." And I walked over to the elevator, and doors were closed. And there stood Angie with a bunch of kids in there, and I said, "Can I ride down?" She said, "Get in here." So as I walked back in, I said, "Okay, I'll be one of the kids." And the little toddler looked up at me, and we the doors always walking out towards the exit, and he looked up at me and he says, you know, as if to say, "You're told to be a kid." He says, "You're awful old." And I looked down at the wee one, rolled me eyeballs, and I said, "I'm 140, lad." Giggle, giggle, giggle. And I had a buddy for life. And let me tell you what, I met Jeanette Finicum and one of the daughters. I met Angie Bundy. I met those families. It is such a joy for young people to have the qualities of Americans 50, 75 years ago. You look at them with love, and you are accepted as family. You are family, not the way it was many years ago. And that was an awesome experience. It gave me hope, but it too gave me a repugnance for the travesties against humanity and what's going on in our court systems now. Okay, next day we spent driving back east along the Olympia River. It's a big, wide river. Reminds me of the Missouri River. Wide river with barges and paddle boats. Just absolutely beautiful country. And we got to Missoula that night, where we had our motel reserved, and a lot of patriots were there. And let me tell you what, there's a patriot group out here now that's reformed. And months ago, when we had the momentum and going in February and March, and we all got divided, we were attacked big time. We were divided. The girls on Facebook were at each other's throats. All organizations of resistance, their leadership was shattered. We were divided. But let me tell you what, this group we're in now, the Bundy crowd, we are united in love. And I'll tell you what, when you're united in love, they will not divide us this time. And we've got people out there driving hundreds of miles a day, Oregon to Montana and all over the place, documenting. And we got in there that night, and Joe was there. And just to give you an indication of how close we were, he was born February 9th, 1939. I was born February 19th, 1940. We found out talking that we were both stationed out of Norfolk, Virginia at the same time. Of course, we never met. The next morning, we found out we were both in a Cuban blockade. And it is very rare to meet another sailor that was in that operation. And needless to say, we were bonded like brothers. And when they hung him, it was very hard on me. Pardon my English, they pissed this old man off. I'm not going to talk about any details in that. All the details and sentencing can be found on Facebook, or just Google it. So I am one of those in the Bundy crowd, the virus. And let me tell you what, we are in the end days. And in these Western states, we are locked in a spiritual battle. That battle is talked about in the scriptures. That battle is prophesied by the Mayans, the Aztecs, passed down from generation to generation, from the Hopis. We are in those times, and we are in this spiritual battle out here in the Western states, in our land battle, in our land grab battle. You're talking, I think I have an ex-friend for Joe, and it is very crucial we start filing on his behalf. And like Jan was saying, we found out later that everything they can do to torment and put pressure on family, friends, and everything else, for Pete's sake, he might wind up down here in Denver, Colorado. I might wind up his next friend, but I'll be paid. And to top that off, he has PTSD very bad. He has two therapy dogs. Now he's without his dogs. He spent the first night in the hospital. Believe it or not, his visit time for a month, and bear in mind that Terry now has the expense of going to another state, travel time for a visit. His visit time is 30 minutes a month. It's either 30 minutes a month or 30 minutes a week. Can you believe that? I can't believe the evil. The evil. And but anyway, during that proceedings, I have had direct battles with evil ones, but I've never confronted the Luciferian powerful evil in the when we were waiting, there's a U.S. Marshal sitting there in the, with his chest puffed out and staring around, playing the role. He looked into my eyes once and never looked again. When Joe was giving his plea, he stood up, folded his hands across his lap and with his chest puffed out and playing his role. I stood up, folded my hands across my lap, and I looked at the judge with a look in my eyes. I am here. I am watching. Do not mess with me. And let me tell you what, I think I've got an ex-friend. I'm going to fry those people up, but I'm going to do everything I can to get that next friend going. I emailed her the intake and the affidavit form. We had a conference with Jan, and coaching her how to do it, and he pointed out the video to her on the website. But let me say this. Out in the trenches, I got the sense that these court documents, the docket, is full of lies, exaggerated lies, and fantasy. We have got to, every time they make a chess move or have a hearing, we have got to respond immediately, eloquently, with pressure, and file an affidavit. File it in that. Get some truth in the court records. We need to get the truth in the court records. And let me tell you what, like I say, these courts right now, they are under tremendous pressure. They are under tremendous pressure. They are scared. They come out today where they're going to, a judge said the Nevada case, it's not going to be public. It's going to be done in private. It's going to be done in the dark. They are afraid because the light is shining on them and they're running. But let me tell you what, right now we have got to reengage. We have got to double the pressure on them. We are winning, and we have got to. Every time there's a hearing, every time they make a move, we have got to respond with an affidavit, with the truth. And this next friend I got, she's one of those that drives 100 miles a day, her and her husband. She's very familiar with the Joe's case, the case in Portland. In fact, she's witnessed to some evidence, which we'll want to make an affidavit and then file in that case. Jan knows about it, but I'm not going to say what it is on air, but that's my story. And like I say, it was a hard ride, and we are winning, but we have to reengage, and we have to put double pressure on it. We have to go, and like Gerard was saying, we have got to affidavit after David after David. Boom, boom, boom. And if we don't have the money, I'll go start a FundMe account or something. I will get the money one way or another. Because, like I say, they pissed this old man off. Now, I am ready to rock and roll. Okay, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. If you want to have a Q&A session, if I don't know an answer, I'll tell you where to go to find it.
Okay, appreciate it, Ali. Thank you. What we'll do is, why don't you mute yourself, hit *6 to mute yourself, and if you get a question that's directed to you, you can hit *6 to unmute yourself, okay?
Oh, okay, muted.
Okay, and one other thing, I'd like to give you a little advice. That docket thing, especially in these cases, are very important. Get a docket as often as possible. Also, let me suggest to you to try to get all of the people involved, all of the people that are in jail, any that have been left out but a part of the case, get them all to do an affidavit, put it into the case, check the dockets, make sure it gets in. Also, anybody that knows or has knowledge of this case, let's get our witnesses into the case. That's the key here, because they love to shoot the witnesses down, to deny them. Let's get affidavits. They can't. Once you get an affidavit and it gets filed into the case, and we can see it on the docket, then it's going to be awfully difficult for them to remove it from that docket once it's in the docket. Get snapshots of those dockets as often as necessary, weekly if necessary. In this case, it sounds like it needs to be weekly, because we need to know what's going into the case, and we need to get affidavit, affidavit, affidavit. Okay. All right, and we will do what we can on that. We're ready to go forward. We're waiting for some information on that case. Ollie, if you can push it along, concerning whether our habeas corpus showed up on their dockets. We need proof by getting a picture of that docket for that purpose. Did it show up, and was it taken off? We need to know that. We also need to know that where it is, if it's been filed or thrown away, concealed, or what.
I was talking to Jan here. Reminded me of something. Couldn't we verify that with Pacer? Is there
Well, I guess we could. I don't know how to use Pacer, but I guess I could figure it out. If anybody that does know how to use Pacer and wants to work with us and check cases out for us, get a hold of us, and let's do it. But, yeah, I presume we can. But remember, if they did remove, if it was into the docket and removed from the docket, it usually should be able to show up in a docket, because those things have a number sequence. And when you see the numbers go off, you know something taken out. So usually that should be a situation, be able to see clearly. But nevertheless, get snapshots of dockets as often as possible. But we also need to know, if it's not in the docket, where is it? We need to know who received that. We do have on our end certified papers that went into the court, so we can probably look up to see the signature on it. But it had to go to the clerk. Someone needs to go to the clerk to find out where this is at. And then we can go after someone for concealment or removal. You know, if the clerk concealed it, then that's our next step. If the judge removed it, then that's our next step. So we'll have to figure that out. But we can start to put some pressure. And we can do this with all our habeas corpuses that we filed, except for the last few. I think three or four we filed recently that we're not at that step yet. But all the other ones before that, they are at that step where we can do that for that case too and start to put more pressure on that. We'd like to apply more pressure on that. What's going on down in New York City is all over habeas corpuses, and particularly our habeas corpus. So there's a lot of pressure going on down there, and it looks like we may be able to get someone with an actual charge, a criminal charge of concealment. So we're working on that hard. You see, we can break into one place like that. That's going to take a ripple effect across the entire nation. Let me tell you something. They are communicating nationally. When I say nationally, I mean all of these chief judges, particularly, or whoever is the head honcho or watching over these federal courts, because believe me, there is communications between these federal courts on some level. And we're on the watch for them. They want to know what we're doing and where we're doing. And if there is a success somewhere, they'll all know about it. And this is what it's all about. They build a wall of resistance, still like the walls of Jericho. And we're putting the pressure by sounding the truth, righteousness, the authority, ultimately, of the people and of God. The truth is God's word, period, ultimately. So we will take this wall down, as long as we continue to do the right thing and continue to put that pressure on. Okay, with that, let me move over to Brent. We've been quite some time. He's going to be starting late here. Brent Winters is a guest of ours. He's with us every week. He's been teaching us things every week. He's been talking on the militia. Brent Winters is the author of Excellence in Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. That's commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. You had mentioned common law and its definition, and folks say it's not natural law, it's this, it's not that, and those kind of accusations have been going on for centuries from the highest courts. I'm reminded of the Supreme Court of the United States and that famous case that every law student learns early on, Erie versus Tompkins, learns the name of the case, doesn't learn anything about it usually in law school, but what they say it stands for. But in that case, the Supreme Court of the United States says that there is no more, as from this day forward, any common law in our federal courts. Well, that's a ludicrous statement. If there is no common law in our federal courts, as the Supreme Court has said, and as far as I know, that's never been directly refuted by the Supreme Court in any of its opinions, but if there is no common law in our Supreme Court, then there is no trial by jury. There is no Bill of Rights that can be invoked. Now, some folk will say, well, and I've had federal prosecutors say this to me, well, then there isn't any rights anybody has in federal court except the right to trial by jury. And even if you get a jury for a criminal trial, it's going to be stacked. Well, I've learned that that is true. I assume in federal court that the feds have stacked the jury. If they can't get the whole jury stacked, they'll get at least one powerful voice on the jury that can nix the defense, push for jail time, push for a conviction. And they're not bashful about doing it, and they do so many things, the federal prosecutors do so many things that are unlawful that it is impossible to sensibly object against all of them. All you'll do is wrap things up. And the judges, of course, they want to stay on the bench till they get a retirement, and they don't want to be questioned or thrown off or have their life threatened or that of their family or get a tax audit. We see that going on now. It's been going on for a long time, ever since the institution of the Federal Reserve Bank and its handmaiden by design, the IRS. The IRS has been a ready tool, a device of presidents to destroy or otherwise hamper their political enemies. We've seen it in the last few years, but what we've seen in the media is nothing compared to what really goes on and what the media never pays any attention to. It's a powerful tool, and it is denial of humanity and human nature to think that jurors and judges aren't cognizant of that. They have to be. We're all human. And if they're cognizant of it and they want security in their job or they don't want to be bothered or they don't want their family to be bothered, they have to think about it. Well, what is the common law? Our common law, most fundamentally, is not a list of laws. And it can emerge anywhere from government. People say, well, our common law is court opinions, not statutes. It's not statutory. Well, that's not precisely true either, because if a state legislature or a Congress of the United States passes legislation that rightly undergirds or expresses our common law, that's good. As a matter of fact, every legislator and every just like every judge, has a bounden duty to do that, to always express the fundamentals of our common law. But our common law is, maybe one way we can put it, is that it is, our Declaration of 76 tells us what it is. It speaks of, lifting this phrase from William Blackstone's commentaries about 11 years before, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Blackstone tells us that that phrase with those two parts comprises the two volumes of God's revelation of his will to man, of what he wants, what God wants of man, his creature, how he wants him to behave, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The first volume, the laws of nature, is unwritten in the nature of things. That is, unwritten in creation. It is general to all men, unwritten in creation, general to all mankind, and through it, God communicates his common grace, the old practitioners used to call it back during the Reformation, his common grace. As the Bible says, God makes the rain fall on the justified man and the unjustified man God's good to everybody to a great degree, greater than any of us deserve. That's called the laws of nature. We can observe certain things that are consistent in creation, certain behaviors of man, certain behaviors of animals. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. That's a law of nature. It doesn't change. It's the Sir Isaac Newton said it is said that he first discovered it and put it into words. Maybe so, maybe no, but he did observe it. He may have thought he was the first. Sir Isaac Newton said that he could calculate precisely the movements of the heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and the stars. Why? Because the laws of nature are perfectly in order. They do not change, and the precision is unfathomable. And we can see that in the heavens. Also, we see the heavens having a definite effect upon the earth. Jesus Christ said, we are to pray, thy authority, thy kingdom, thy basileia, come, thy will be done on the land. On the land, that's the better translation in my studied opinion. On the land as it is in the skies, up in the heavens. And that's what happens when the moon pulls in the tides, and those also are calculated precisely. That's what happens when the sun communicates its energy and its life-giving force to plants, turning through the mystery of chlorophyll, turning food into the plants taken from the ground, the sun using the chlorophyll to use its energy, transferring that energy of the sun to the plant itself, making the plant larger. It's amazing. It's not a miracle, but it is not understandable entirely. But it is not a miracle. It is not a suspension of the laws of nature. It's God. But it is the laws of nature. Well, there are many laws of nature. We can observe them. Our Constitution of the United States is a summary of man's observations of the laws of nature. The way things are, by their nature, we have observed, and we've tested them over centuries. Our Constitution, as I keep saying, is a brief of our common law government. Well, the same thing is true of Magna Carta. The same thing is true of the English Bill of Rights of the year 1628. The same thing is true of the laws of Edward the Confessor, back during the 11th century. The same thing is true of the old Saxon mirror of the law, going back to the continent of Europe. Well, all these observations are consistent with the Scottish Covenants of the year 1648, the demonstration of the covenants. All of those things are part or an expression of what is observable in nature and generally applicable to all mankind, unwritten till we observe it and write it down. Sometimes we're wrong, but over the centuries we hammer out what is right. That's what our common law is, the laws of nature. Things as they are in the nature of things, and they will not change. The second volume, says Blackstone, is the laws of nature's God. The first, he says, is lex non scripta, law non written. The second, the Bible, is law written, lex scripta, says Blackstone, and it is the particular revelation, not the general applicable to all men, the particular revelation. When I say applicable, I mean this. It's not given to all men. It's only given to God's people, and God's people are empowered to do what it says to do once they've learned it, and others are convicted by it and may be driven to want to do it, and God may grant them the power to do it. And that's what Christianity is all about, fundamentally, is God's people being empowered particularly above others to do as God tells them to do. And if you have a doubt that you're God's man or God's woman, the Bible tells us that that's proof positive that you are, because you wouldn't wonder or care otherwise. And John Knox made much of that. It's very true. The Bible says that. So when we have our doubts about whether or not we're God's people, God says, rest easy, because that's my proof, my indication that you are. So our common law is truly the laws of nature, the laws that God has given to us in his own creation, and they're observable. Well, part of that law of nature, the laws of nature, our common law, is our understanding through our common law what we call the militia of the several states. It's in our Constitution, where there are four militia clauses. And each one of those militia clauses address duties of a particular class of people. The four militia clauses, respectively, address the duties of that class of people we call the Congress of the United States. Secondly, the second clause addresses that class of people we call presidents of the United States. The third one addresses the duties of that class of people called legislators and governors of states, state legislators and governors. And in each one of those three first militia clauses, duties are delegated to men with functions in government to protect, to do certain things in order to protect freedom and protect our liberty, our lives, our liberties, and our properties. And those three, by the way, are inextricably bound, just like body, soul, and spirit. We can contemplate them separately, life, liberty, and property. But we cannot remove any one of them from the other. They stand and fall together. If we remove liberty, we don't have property anymore, and life becomes meaningless. If we remove life, obviously, we don't have life, liberty, or property. And if we remove, life, if we remove property, property is the means of life. Without property, for example, food, life ends. And our food becomes our property, of course. And then other things enhance our life and enable us to have, as Jesus Christ put it, life more abundant. I come to give you life. That's salvation. That's the way that's understood. I come to save you, drag you out of the mud, drag you out of the poison, drag you out of the sludge, the slime. I've done that. Now that I've got you up on the beach and you're not drowning anymore, I've resuscitated. Yeah, I've come to give you life, he says, and that, he says, more abundant. And our property enables us, if we use it to the best of its use, to have more abundant life. Well, the militia of the several states. The fourth militia clause does, unlike the other three, doesn't delegate any duties to any class of people or anybody. It simply states a responsibility called a right, and that responsibility is to keep and bear weapons in the defense of ourselves and in the defense of those to whom we are responsible, our families and our neighborhoods and our country. You see, it is a fundamental duty delegated by God that a man preserve his life. It's an instinct. We don't have to think much about it, but we can get so discouraged that we don't really care to do it much anymore. And God wants to spark us up and say, no, you must preserve your life. Why? Because I granted it to you, and I'm the only one that has the authority, the right, the jurisdiction to take it away. He who has the power to give has also the power to take. I don't have the power to give life. My life was given to me as a gift. And with that gift, that jurisdiction of life, comes the duty to defend that jurisdiction against those who would take it away from me unlawfully. And I know there's justified homicide, justified killing. But I'm not talking about that right now. I'm talking about the right to keep and bear arms as part and parcel to the right of self-protection, protection of the lives of one's family and others for whom one may be responsible. And to be sure, the militia of the several states does not belong to the federal government, as our forebears used to call it, the general government, sitting in Washington, D.C. But the militia of the several states neither belongs to the people. Doesn't belong to them. That's not it. That's not talking sensible. No, the people are the militia. It doesn't belong to them. They are the militia. And so they have each person Each male, able-bodied to carry a weapon in battle, is a member of the militia of the several states. And it is that subset of the people able to carry and use a gun. A military-grade weapon. The colonial militia, said the Supreme Court of the United States in the Miller case back in the 1930s, and I'm quoting, comprised all males physically capable of acting in concert for the common defense, who, when called for service, were expected to appear bearing arms supplied by themselves and of the kind in common and of the kind in common use at the time. Let me repeat that. The Miller case was off in some respects. It was the first case where the Supreme Court could have seriously considered the Second Amendment, the Fourth Militia Clause, the duty of the militiamen themselves. And they did say some good things. Let me repeat it. Said this, the militia comprised in those days of our Constitution, in the contemplation of those who drafted our Constitution, comprised all males capable physically of acting in concert for the common defense. You see, they're able-bodied to carry a weapon in battle. I didn't say able-bodied to carry a weapon. You got to be able to act in concert. That means you've got to be part of a group of men. That doesn't mean that the right to keep and bear arms only exists when you're in that role of being mustered. And we'll talk about that maybe as time goes along more. The right to keep and bear arms is perpetual because the militia is to be regular, ever ready. But the militia consisted at that time of those who were able to act in concert with other men when called for service and were expected to appear bearing arms. You see, that's before muster, before the federal government or the state government has any jurisdiction, the president or the governor of your state has any jurisdiction over you. You come with your weapon because your weapon is part of your life. Come bearing arms supplied by themselves of the kind in common use at the time. That means common military use. Indeed, for a man to be ready to fight at a moment's notice, he must keep his firearm and ammunition handy in his home. And when he leaves his home, he must carry that gun with ammunition. If that's not true, the Second Amendment has no meaning. Thus, the Second Amendment's well-regulated militia are those men of the people self-trained, and that's an important element of our common law of the militia. If I have to depend upon somebody else to train me, namely the government, then I'm in the control of the government. The militia has lost its bite. Every militiaman, according to our common law, is to obtain and purchase his own weapon and then obtain and purchase the training for safety and marksmanship that he is required to have. He's to do that at his own expense and himself. Self-armed, ready to respond to lawful militia summons, each man carrying his weapon and ammo. Indeed, then, the Second Amendment is not to protect any right to hunt game. I know it sounds obvious, should be obvious, but it isn't. I remember back in the days when I was a political animal and running for U.S. Congress, the Second Amendment was an issue, big time. And nobody back in those times, 20 years ago, nobody at that time was saying that the Second Amendment was so that men could shoot other people if need be, or threaten other people if it need be. People weren't saying that because they were afraid to say it, I suppose. But I remember we talked a lot about the Second Amendment. We were in the media talking about it. We were on television, radio, newspapers. We had debates. But nobody ever said that. But today, in the last 10 years at least, maybe a little longer, people have been saying it in spades. The Second Amendment is not about hunting. Not at all. So the spirit of the times has changed the way we're talking. And we're becoming more aggressive about the way we're talking about the Second Amendment. Second Amendment is to enable men to protect their families, themselves, of course, and their neighbors and their country. And the Second Amendment is there to protect the right against state and local infringement. Now, let me speak a little bit about the militiaman's duty. What is the state militiaman's duty? I said there is no federal militia. That's true. There is no federal militia. There's only the militia of each one of the states, according to our United States Constitution. And that's an important element to what our militia is. And our Constitution, those that ratified it, the states themselves, intended that the states have ultimate power, the balance of power, I should say, more than the general government in Washington, D.C., over its state militia. And if we would follow the Constitution according to the duties of each of those four classes of people I told you about, congressmen, presidents, state legislators and governors, and then the militiamen themselves, if we each would recognize the separate and exclusive duty respecting the militia of the several states in each one of those persons, according to what our Constitution says, our militia would be powerful for freedom and would be a hedge against the overreach, that's an understatement, the overreach of the federal and the state governments against our liberties. Our common law defines the militiaman's duty as it does other fundamental rights and institutions of our Constitution. Defines it well. The militia, I repeat this and it bears repeating, is that group of men always armed and ready to respond under local and state command to meet the threat that comes fast without warning. Fast without warning. Again, the word regular, that's what it indicates. That's why men are charged with a duty, which the old Anglo-Saxon tongue called a right. A right does not have a corresponding duty. A right is a duty, according to the old language. We've hijacked its meaning. A man, able-bodied, has a duty to be armed. Otherwise, how could he be part of that group? Or even himself, if he had to meet that threat that comes fast and without warning. Indeed, to keep one's firearm in one's home and to carry it loaded, having become familiar with it through, watch this word, regular use, is to strengthen our country's safety. As such persons, says the Second Amendment, are necessary to our freedom. Remember, you can't have freedom and security at the same time without the militia of the several states. You can have security, and the government says it'll give it to you, but the government wants in exchange your freedom to some degree. That's axiomatic. It's not going to change. And the only thing that makes that different for us as Americans is that Americans have a lawful protection guaranteed to them, the right to keep and bear arms by the Second Amendment of our Constitution. The other common law duty of a militiaman is willingness to serve as a grand and petit juryman. Grand jury or trial jury duty. And to come around again and say it again. The oath of our office holders in America, not to mention all of those charged with duty under our government, even military duty, right down to the lowliest seaman and soldier. And all lawyers, by the way, take this oath. All lawyers in the United States are required to, because they are officers of the court, all judges, all state prosecutors, all federal prosecutors, all congressmen, all state legislators, take the same oath, fundamentally, to support and defend the Constitution against, watch this, enemies foreign, and enemies domestic. But the ancient oath, fundamentally, that is the ancient oath of our common law going back as far as the 9th century in England, to protect the land against foreign and domestic enemies. And that is the oath of the militiamen called the Third Fair in ancient Anglo-Dane England, and to defend against external enemies, foreign, means armed defense of the militiamen. To defend against domestic enemies means to be willing to serve on the grand and petit jury and to bring suit against those that would threaten our land and the law of the land. And the law of the land in ancient England, our common law, referenced our Constitution, Article 6, the law of the land, is inextricable in our understanding of our common law from our land, L-A-N-D. We're talking about dirt. We're talking about ground. You know, my brother went to the Naval War College years ago, and he got back, and I asked him a couple of questions. I said, what'd you learn, Dave? He said, well, two things that I had to stand out in my mind. He said, number one, numbers seem to win. Numbers. All other things being equal in battle. But he said it's not always the greater numbers. It's just the critical mass of numbers, whatever that might be at any given point. Could amount to not very many people, but it is numbers. But he said, secondly, and more importantly to me, he said, any war that's ever fought for something other than dirt, for something other than real estate, is a water haul. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of lives and blood and money. But he said, that's the two things I learned, and I find it fascinating. But the law of the land has always been inextricable from land. How many times have we gone to war now in recent times and fought for something other than real estate, than to conquer land, and came home with our tail between our legs or with just a lot of dead bodies and body bags and frustrated, confused? I shouldn't always say our tail between our legs, because in a lot of cases we didn't get run off, but we did come back confused, whooped in mind. Why did we do that? Vietnam is a good example. We didn't fight for real estate in Vietnam. If we did, we turned it right back over to them. We were we weren't fighting for land, and we weren't fighting men. We were fighting, they said officially, against an idea called communism. That doesn't work. It's like having a war on poverty or a war on crime, a war on something other than men to take land. Is a waste of our time. Well, that was a footnote I thought might be important to drop. Let me get back to the militia. Our Constitution's domestic tranquility of our preamble to our Constitution requires an armed people. It says in the preamble of our Constitution, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, and it talks about the common defense, but then it says right in the middle of all that, ensure domestic tranquility. Promote the general welfare, but ensure domestic tranquility. Tranquility is the peace, anciently called the peace. What is peace? At common law, it's the same thing as it is in the Bible. Shalom. It's not the absence of war, it's the presence of order in the midst of battle. And the battle never ceases. And he who keeps order, the side in a battle that keeps the order, wins. And it is the object of both of the parties in a battle to destroy the order of the other side. Because when you destroy the order, you've won the battle. By the way, that's what professional football or any football game is all about, destroying the order of the other side. It's fundamentally the same idea. And domestic tranquility means our inner order here in the United States. We have to have an armed people. I would never invade the United States. I would never invade the United States, said Yamamoto during World War II. He continues saying there would be a gun behind every blade of grass. But I say further with old Colonel Cooper, who was the founder of that marksmanship school out in Arizona, one of the first big ones, Gunsight. Colonel Cooper says an armed people are a polite people. An armed people are better mannered. It creates order. order, which is domestic tranquility. So to sum up, most people are law-abiding and inclined to carry inclined to carry guns, but are uninclined to gun crimes. Most people are law-abiding and uninclined to gun crimes, and only a small minority is so inclined, the criminal class. But because only the law-abiding will observe firearm laws, government infringement upon the right to keep and carry firearms limits only the law-abiding, not the criminal class. Consequently, the result of infringement on your right to keep and bear a gun is not only foreseeable, but is also now seen. Government employees' deep disrespect for fundamental law and rights produce the people's disrespect for government. If, on the other hand, government abides by this law of nature, that is, the right of self-protection of which our militia clauses speak, if they abide by it, never limiting one's keeping and carrying of guns, the law-abiding and armed men will outnumber the lawless, the coward class, out for the easy mark, unwilling to risk plundering, robbing, or raping any of the armed and law-abiding class. Guns bring order. What is order? It is domestic tranquility. Well, that's enough for this evening, John. Thanks again. And I appreciate all the pieces you allowing me to try to pass along what I've tried to compile. And the opportunity to say the truth is of inestimable value to me.
Okay, thank you, Brent. We'll take some questions now. We'll see if anybody has any questions. Let's move over to the Q&A. Anybody has any questions or comments for Brent, star 6 to get into the queue, and we'll take them. I know Ali's still here. When we move over to general questions, if anybody has a question concerning what's going on out there in Oregon, they can ask Ali. But we've got Ron from California. Ron, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Ron, you're unmuted.
Yeah, John. Boy, that was quick. Yeah. I didn't expect to get in this, and I was just wanted to add one thing since it was kind of for Brent Winters. I've been reading his Militia of the Several States primer, and that quote, in fact, I want to find it so I don't misquote it, about Yamamoto and World War II. You could probably help me out if I can't find it right away, but he basically, there was two you put in there. It was really interesting. I did not know the other one, but it was about the, here I am caught off. But the point was, is there was such a hail of small arms fire. The pilots were taken aback by that. Now, I did not ever know that before, but that is the militia. That's the people. My gosh. Uh-huh. That's an incredibly powerful thing, and that just supports everything you've said about people having their being ready.
Yeah, he put it this way. One of the Japanese pilots, after the war was over, said that you could walk on the small arms fire. It was so thick. And he said, of course, it tore their planes up, or it didn't stop them necessarily, but it tore them up. And when they got back to the carriers, they examined the planes. They were amazed. It tells a story. When that is, it should be told. But people in Hawaii were armed, and
absolutely.
Yeah, they were armed for good reason. Just for the same reason men ought to be armed today, because men are inherently dangerous creatures. Can we think of a creature more dangerous than man? You talk about a rattlesnake. I can deal with rattlesnakes. I know how to stay away from them. I used to live out west in the desert in Arizona. I worked up in the mining districts, and I learned real quick, didn't know much about them, but I learned how to stay away from them. I learned what their habits were. I knew what I learned when mating season was, and I learned how to dispatch them quickly if I saw them, but not so with mankind. And the reason is, of course, he's off. Mankind is the fly in the ointment of creation. I mentioned that quote a while ago of Sir Isaac Newton about, he said, I can calculate the absolute precision, the movements of the heavenly bodies, but he said, I cannot even begin to predict the behavior of man. It is, the heart of man is inherently black, says Jeremiah the prophet. And anyone who says otherwise is denying what they see in nature, what they see going on. The Bible says that all of creation groans, awaiting for the redemption of man. We live in a dangerous world, and all of those around us are posed for war. I read years ago a 10-volume set of History of the World by a man and his wife, and you'd think I could remember their name, maybe somebody can, almost said it. It was 10 volumes, and the final volume was a little volume, and it was a summary of the 10 volumes. He starts at the beginning of the recorded history of man, carries it on through, and he said that, him and his wife writing, said that they calculated that in the history of mankind there had only been 164 years of what we call time without war. They call it peace. I tried to define peace, real peace. But times of no war, 164 years. And they said during those 164 years, men were reloading their weapons, preparing for the next bout. And that's the history of man, is war. And we here in America have said this. Our common law says this. We say we want to have courts. And if we have conflicts, we don't want blood. We want to avoid it as best as possible. We want to go to court and settle our differences and reestablish our dignity and our honor. And that's what court is all about. I've got a case right now, and it's worth a lot of money if my client were ever able to get it. But I know for a fact, because I've been around him, we've talked, it's not about the money. Not even a little bit. At his age especially, I suppose I should say, any person would be this way. It just sticks so deeply in his craw that he's been abused by powerful people. And he wants his honor established. You know, the Declaration of 76 said those men that made the complaints, it's a common law complaint, against England under a common law doctrine called praemunire, which means that if the crown of England withdraws its protection and becomes a warring enemy out to kill the people that he's sworn to protect, then under that doctrine, he's breached and we have a duty to get out. The deal's off. And that's what, of course, they were arguing, but they said that they pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, that's their property, life, property, and sacred honor. Sacred honor. What is their sacred honor? That's part of their liberty, their sacred honor. Life, liberty, and property, but expressed a little bit differently. And honor is sacred in the sense, the word sacred, an old Latin-based word, it means it's set apart, it's something special that every man has. But here's the reason we have honor as men. And here's the reason we go to court. And we want to try to reestablish it. And as John Locke said, if there are no courts, then men are under a demand to establish their honor themselves. And that comes down to violence. As the old common law used to have the blood feud and the outlaw. Not such, those aren't all wrong. I'm just saying we're trying to have a more ordered world in America through our common law. And they wanted to establish their sacred honor, their dignity, and it comes to man because God has given it to each one of us when he created us out of his holy imagination. I like to call it his holy imagination because it is his imagination, and that's what it means, the imago Dei, the image of God in every man, created in his image, that means out of his imagination. He imagined us in his mind, and he's the only one, by the way, that has the right to do that. He imagined what we looked like and what we were, and then he made us just the way he imagined us. And by the way, God says in the second commandment that we have no jurisdiction, right, or authority to return the compliment to him and imagine what he looks like and then make something that we think is God. That's called idolatry. We're not allowed to do that. He has created, he has that power and jurisdiction of creating man by his out of his imagination in his image, his imagination. Well, at any rate, we have dignity because of that. Dignity, and we don't have it otherwise. No man has dignity apart from God, and if you want more dignity, then you must get closer to God. How do you get closer to your Creator, the one that made you? You learn, safeguard, and do what he tells you to do. You learn his standards, his law, and you determine at all costs to do right, because that's what right is. It's what God wants, not what anybody else wants, not what any congressman may or may not want, or Supreme Court justice. It may be that they've observed what is right, but it may be they have not. Recently, the Supreme Court, with a high hand and a slap and a spit in God's face, with full knowledge, I have to conclude, they knew what they were doing. They weren't just mistaken. They spit in God's face and said, no, men can sodomize men, and we'll make an institution called marriage out of it. And God's not, he's not brooking any of that, and he won't. And we're suffering because of it. And if we don't want to be cut off from the land, and that's what the Bible means when it says cut off, that means from the land. We're being cut off from the land. And if you don't believe it, look what's happening to men who try to live on the land and build ponds and get sent to jail for doing it because they want water. That's driving people off the land. All of these things we've heard about the Bundys are just small examples of what's happening all over the country. And our cities are burgeoning. Our land is being abandoned. We're cut off. And when you're cut off from the land, you're cut off from the law of the land, and you come under the law of the city. And you are separated from reality. You live in a world of fantasy, a law with city law, the law of fantasy, what men want but can't obtain. Because they want to live like animals and yet live in liberty. That's fantasy. It can't happen. You can't live that way, like lawlessly live like animals. But we have responsibility. We're not animals. Well, I suppose I've responded enough. But Second Amendment's an important part of our law. No question.
Well, no, this is all great. I mean, I have to say, reading the militia primer is really great. It's very clear, and it says things in a marvelous way. And I'm reading the Excellence of Common Law, and some of the things that you're alluding to. In other words, the common thread. Well, let me say it's the thread that in there, based on the militia and us protecting ourselves and having a nature that is one that wants to. Well, you used terms like warring or protecting our liberty, really fighting for our liberty, is another facet of the same thing. So we have a nature, whether it's turned to a non-productive side, causing chaos in the world, or fighting in courts, fighting for our country, fighting for the people the state that we live in, our community, our family. That's a productive side of it that seems to fit into this. And everything that you're describing, that there are different different expressions of it, but like the Danes and the Anglo-Saxons that you, God, that book is great. The Common Law book, it has such a history in it. Everybody should read that. And everybody should read the militia book too. But it talks about how the Anglo-Saxons and the Danes would do that because they came from that kind of culture. And when they went into England, this is the kind of response they had to have because they had to protect their land. They had to be ready if something and infringed on it. And there you go. You respond. That's you have to be able to do that. So that comes back to a very basic and a common kind of thread in us all that we need to be able to defend that. And that is, as you put it, I would suspect, is by design. How it gets manipulated into evil or good is, again, the question. But what you're talking about, what with the outline of the Constitution, the great Constitution of these United States, is and it being a common law creature, which is really interesting, and it shows, and I'll divert for just a moment, because another thing in the militia that was really a pamphlet, which is really great, and it shows how things are turned upside down, is it explained how you have the people, and out of the people that are given rights, that's you and me and everybody, God-given rights, inalienable rights, was developed a constitution. It's a creature of the people, and then out of that, you have the president, you have the SCOTUS, you have the Congress. Those are creatures or features, creatures of the Constitution. So in the order of things, they're down about third tier, but they're very important, but yet they're made out and they're supposed to be beholden to we the people. And that is like turned upside down and backwards these days in every incidents we see.
Yeah. You've used a good phrase. I can say it this way, and that's a good way to say it. The president, the Congress, and the Supreme Court of the United States are creatures of the Constitution, creations of our Constitution. But the militia of the several states, the fourth militia clause talks about, by contrast, is not a creature of our Constitution. The militia of the several states is a creature of God, is a creation of God. That's the difference. And I should say it that way. Now that, because the contrast is what helps folk understand, helps me understand. I like contrast. And well, isn't it fascinating that the evil empire wants to take contrast away? It takes away the pizzazz of life. They want men and women to be the same. Well, that would take a lot away from me. I like girls. Got five daughters, wife, got a mother, got a grandma. Well, they're gone now. I had a bunch of them at one time. I like girls. I don't understand them, but I like them. And there's the contrast. There's the contrast that makes life worth living. Things like that, color, and different, everything. Oh, it goes on and on and on. But the evil empire wants uniformity. They want everybody to fit into their legislation, for example.
Yeah.
Without, and our courts don't do that. Our common law courts are about specific instances. In the rest of the world, the evil empire, the civil law, they call them courts. They aren't. They're just there to invoke and make uniform the will of the powerful party, which is the state. I want to add something here. Very kind words about the books. I've written several, and I don't write them to be praised for them. But that helps. But I appreciate that. And if that helps, other people say, "Well, I'd like to read it too." I want people to read them because these books were written all in about 10, 12 years. And they were written during a time when I was being put upon hard by the powers that be. And I was down. They took everything I had. They tried to take my wife, my children, my family, my liberty, everything. Jeez. Tried to take my law license. That was what they were really after. And they didn't get my law license. But it made life rough. And I was trying to maintain my stability in my head at that time. And I dove into these subjects. And I lived there for a long time. Now I'm still there, and I probably will be the rest of my life. But I'd been studying them over the years, of course. I was a lawyer and all, but and other things. I'd done other things in life. But it all kind of came together because of that incredible hardship. And I say incredible. It was incredible to me. I didn't lose my life, and I know folk that have been through a whole lot worse. But it wasn't easy, I'll say that. But it arose out of that. But you can obtain those books at Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and they'll come up. And then you can pick out the one you want, Excellence of the Common Law, almost 1,000 pages, comparing and contrasting the law of the land, our common law, with the law of the city, tracing its history on every continent from the settling of the city of Babylon a long time ago right on through to the present and how that's played out. And then Militia of the Several States, a primer, a short book about the Fourth Amendment, your right to remain silent, a book about the jury at common law and the grand jury and jury duty. It's those books, those three, are about 100 pages. And there also is an audio commentary of 30 hours, blow by blow, in order, going through Magna Carta and expounding it and showing the applicability of the principles of Magna Carta in our own day. You can find those at Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters. But now I'm working also on the Common Lawyer, used to call it the Common Lawyer Study Bible, but now I call it the Winters Translated and Annotated Bible, because I call it toward a literal translation. Translation of the original Hebrew and Aramaic text of the Older Testament, the Greek text of the New Testament, with almost 24,000 footnotes to the text throughout the entire Bible, detailed headnotes to each of the Bible's 66 books, and 40 appendices, and all of that trying to expound and explain and show, as the Bible presents it, the difference between the law of the land and the law of the city, because the history of mankind and the history of the Bible is told in the antagonism between the law of the land and the law of the city. The Bible is inherently and in every way a writing of legal significance. The Messiah himself, Jesus Christ, came and became a man. God took on the form of a man and suffered, bled, and died for all of his people so that his law would be fulfilled and the price for our breaking his law would be paid. The law of God never changes, and he doesn't just overlook anything. He said either you pay for your sin, that means transgression of the law, according to the Bible, or I'll pay for it. If you paid for it, you're not going to survive it. So God himself, our creator, paid for our transgressions of his law. We have the record of that in the Bible, and then we have the result of it. And the result of it is we're empowered, his people are now empowered to do what he tells them to do, to keep his law, and they will, if they are born from above, they will love his will. They'll love it. It'll become more important to them than anything else they could possibly obtain. God's will becomes everything. Jesus Christ said, my meat, that is my food, is to do the will of him that sent me. I'd rather do what God says than eat. Well, if a man ever gets that into his bosom, and that becomes the driving force of his life, life really is worth living. And it really gets exciting. And it becomes all-consuming and rather wonderful, I might add. So that's why I talk about these things.
Well, amen to that, yeah. Brent. Yeah, yeah, Ron, final point.
You know,
a couple of people.
Okay, well, and I'll just say that I didn't have the head for ferreting out what you've done. It's good to know this book on the biblical explanation is there. I'll look forward to that at some point in time when I get there. But listen, John, I wanted to bring up something to your attention, or Gerard's, or whoever. I'm looking right now at the calendar of the events, and I was talking with Terry. She wanted me to call and say something because I had a connection with her in regards to ham radio, and I'm looking into that. She was very helpful. I looked at the ARRL site, .org site, and I tried to find something within a 25-mile radius here in Southern California and wasn't able to do so. She got me right there to a local in the first week of August, I'll be going to a meeting for local people that are involved with ham radio here in Orange County and be able to start. And that's so the point being is, and this really goes around, it's an implied thing in everything that's been going on in this conversation, and that is about communication. And you said it earlier because you really hammered the point about the ham radio thing and the point in time when it should interruption of services goes down. And I was talking with a fella at the Apple store, and he's basically preparing and stuff, and he says, you know, I gave him information on the ham radio, and actually said you can call Terry and you can look at National Liberty Alliance and you know, because he said if things go down, you know, he pulls out his iPhone, he says this isn't going to work. And so what will work are radio waves. You have a charge and stuff, and that's going to work. And in fact, it's going to be, even in the time of not emergency, it's still connecting and communicating, and it gives you capabilities of doing that kind of thing. The Baofeng, B-A-O-F-E-N-G, handheld model, which is something that's available out there, you can get one of those for under 50, 60 bucks, 40 bucks. I've seen they have three models. 4 to 8 watt different models. You can handheld them. You don't have to get a technician's license, and you can participate. You can listen in. Now, who's not going to want to get a ham radio thing? And I was talking with Terry, and she's helping me. She gave me the basic classes of questions, which was very, very helpful. I still have the information to go through. I'll let you know when and if I get a technician's, you know, thing. But part of this was we talked about the idea was that here, 2-3 weeks it's been talked about. The idea is that there is help already. I mean, she's what do they call them? Well, I can't think of a name. There's a name that for tutors or people that are
helping. Here, Elmer.
An advisor?
There you go.
Elmer.
I'm sorry.
Elmer.
Yes. An Elmer. Thank you. Thank you, Terry. And so I wanted to just bring this up. It's an ongoing thing, and I believe that probably there are other people doing this. I've run into other people, a vet that was at the Apple store of all places who struck up a conversation, and he's been trying to get his license. He didn't quite get 26. Out of 35, you can miss 25%, 9 of them, and still get your tech license. It's a very doable thing, and right away the point that wanted to be made was you can get
that technology, you can get and hold in your hands a Bofang ham radio. It used to be the tech was expensive and people would have to put up large antennas and all kinds of things. Well, you can still do that later on if you get into that much of it. The point being made here is everybody on this call can get one of those. Now, you may have to wait for an accessory that is sold out at this point, and that's an accessory. I just looked at that. It's a handheld microphone kind of thing, speaker they call it. But
we'll work with that particular type of a unit, probably the very same one, but it also has, is that same unit have the other six channels that has nothing to do with ham radio but gives you the local communications?
There's five channels that you can go on with no license on
right.
that radio.
So that's the one we're working on, and we'll be hopefully unveiling that before next Monday where people can buy it through National Liberty Alliance. And then that the proceeds, of course, will go to help what we're doing here to save America, because we need to be funded somehow. So hopefully people will buy it from us. I mean, you might be able to get a little cheaper someplace else, but look it, we need to be funded. The other thing is that we're offering also a technical service with this, which we're working out, because the individual who's actually selling these things and is going to work with us on this, they actually do some programming with this so that radio will also pick up the emergency services within their own specific county. So they will dial in and get all that. So you'll pick up the trunk, any emergency services going on, and some other things that you'll be able to pick up that is really local. Also, it gives you communications for local abilities. You know, your wife has one and you got one, or the kids have one, and you can communicate close by town or with friends and neighbors down the street and so on and so forth. So you really got a good communication system with this. And at the same time, you tune in and can listen into what's going on the national end through the ham side of things. So it's a very versatile, and also I understand, if there's any phone systems up at the time, but even now, you can even make a phone call off of these things. So this is pretty amazing piece of technology here that we're talking about, and it's an inexpensive one. It's something that even if you had a big system, you'd want one of these in your back pocket anyway as you're traveling around. And I understand you can extend its services by putting a larger antenna on it and potentially maybe even hook it into your car with a larger antenna, I guess. And the key thing about ham or these radios, of course, is it's battery operated. So, I mean, this is great stuff all the way around. It's exactly what we're looking for. And we'd like to try to get everybody on the same plan here if possible. I mean, again, people might want to go to the heavy extensions, you know, to actually put up a huge antenna and go through the process of spending thousands of dollars or whatever's involved here to really do something on a big level, and that's fine. But everyone, and even that individual doing on the big level, should be working on something that's handheld local and has local communications. So, but
well, this is new.
We'll
this is good to
more.
Hear, you know? Yeah. Didn't know this.
Yeah, so
well,
we're going to put together a good plan, and people need to get involved, and they need to get involved quick because we're out of time, folks. We are out of time. You ain't got a committee of safety in your county yet or working on one yet. Shame on you. You need to get one now, tomorrow,
and that brings me to another point. The committee of safety needs to communicate, and you need a radio operator, and we need
Absolutely.
To have this technology. This needs to happen, okay? And if nothing else, and until I see this going on, I can still get an education and go to these local things and basically learn about radio. That's a good thing. I intend to doing this because it's just something I like to do, and I think I can do this. And
Absolutely.
I was really, really glad to hear about Terry, and she's helping me too. One last thing, and I really support this. This is really good to know, if nothing else, out of this conversation before you were able to put it on. Now people will realize this is coming. This is a good thing. She has her call signs up here. I'm looking at it right now. Carrie, it's K-I, and it's a misspell. It says O. It's supposed to be a zero. She corrected me multiple times. It's supposed to be K-I-0-R-E. That's her communication by ham call sign. It says K-I-O-R-E. It needs to be corrected to be K-I-0-R-E. That's her call sign. If I'm correct, Terry, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I kept misspelling it, and you corrected me that it was a zero, not an O. I'm a K-I-0-R-E. So on the website, if somebody can please correct that, and that was the one last little detail, I just, because I had eyes on it. I'm you know, when you have eyes on, that's the time to make the observations, and it'll become less important.
Yeah, I'm not
important.
Sure on the web, where on the website this error is.
Calendar of events. Calendar of events.
On the calendar.
Weekly.
So whoever put that up on the calendar of events needs to fix that. I guess Jen or Carl could possibly get it in and just make the correction anyway. But okay, we'll do that.
Mistake. Yeah.
Huh?
Well, thank you. Thank the very easy typo to do. Very easy. I can understand that. So.
Oh, yeah.
But I just wanted to bring it to your attention, and thank you for allowing me to talk. And thank you, Mr. Winters. I appreciate your communicating. It's great stuff. And John, as always, you know, God bless everyone.
My pleasure.
And by the way, you know, each committee of safety has a committee of correspondence. And in the committee of correspondence, that'll be one of their duties, is to make sure the communications goes, the correspondence goes between these committees of safeties across the nation or across the state. It doesn't matter. Well, we need to connect, and we need to know what's going on a daily basis, and we need to get into the good fight here. So, but... I got a question here for you, Brent. Is an acquittal and a hung jury the same thing? What is a hung jury, and what should happen when a jury gets hung? Is that an acquittal?
No. A hung jury is when one juryman or more doesn't agree with everybody else. In other words, a hung jury is a jury that is not unanimous in their verdict. One or more says not guilty, and the rest of them say guilty, or vice versa. It is a peculiar requirement of our common law. Common law is not a majority institution, and the proof of that is the most fundamental decider, from whom there is no appeal, by the way, is our jury. It is not the Supreme Court of the United States. It is not the Supreme Court of the state. It is not the president. It is not the legislative body like Congress or the legislature. None of those trump the other. But the thing, the institution that does trump everything is the jury. And our Constitution puts that in itself. It says that so that we will remember our common law on this point. It says that the facts as established by the jury shall not be questioned except according to the rules or the course of our common law, in other words, due process. If they came to them wrong outside of common law, and I've been in cases where that's happened, and then that will also throw the case, and it'll just be a no case, and if they want to try it again, they will. But the jury, if it's hung, is a jury that's not unanimous. But what happens in those cases, in most cases, as a practical matter, is the prosecutors, whoever they may be, will move to impanel another jury or retry the case. Now, I personally have a little trouble with that because our common law says that there's a doctrine, a teaching we have called res judicata, or double jeopardy, I guess the way to say it. And that's what our Constitution says. No man shall be put in jeopardy of life, limb, and property twice for the same fundamental action. I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what it says. It's called double jeopardy. And if you're tried once and the jury hangs, well, that means the prosecutor couldn't kick it over the bar. He couldn't kick it over the goalpost. It was too high. Beyond a reasonable doubt, it was too high. He didn't make it. Then why does he get a second chance? He shouldn't. But our courts have consistently said he does. I'm not sure I understand that. I'm just a guy who tries to study the law and figure out what it means and figure out who's right and who's wrong. I think that's dead wrong. Double jeopardy is double jeopardy. Life, limb, or property placed in jeopardy.
Well, that's how I thought myself, but I wanted to get that confirmation there from you because, it doesn't make sense, and it does seem that it would be double jeopardy. And look, at the prosecutor's looking to get a prosecution, and like you say, if he can't get it, he can't get it. And because there's a conflict within the jury, that's it. They should walk. I mean, I think that's clear to me. In history, do we have much in history to give us some thoughts from our past?
Well, in our own country, now, it's been pretty consistent for many decades, what I've just said. Now, if a jury, I wanted to add this and I forgot to, if a jury acquits a man, well, then our courts say he can't be tried again. No double jeopardy. As to being able to recite court cases, when it changed and how and what the history of it is, I haven't looked into that particular doctrine that close. And so I don't know a lot of the history about that, and it's something that I'm anxious to tear into. I haven't found the time to do it in the midst of the other things I'm trying to do. But you raise a good question, and if I find out more about it, if that comes in within my purview, I'll pass it along.
Okay, appreciate that. Do that. Okay, let's go to our next caller. Let's see. It is Ann from New Mexico, it looks like. Go right ahead, Ann.
Hi. Nice to hear you, John. And the individual that was with Ammon Bundy, two questions. One is, how is Ammon doing emotionally? With this,
okay, Ali, star six to unmute yourself. If you don't get unmuted, I see you on the board. I can pull unmute you, but go ahead, Ann, finish up.
Ali, how is Ammon doing emotionally? And secondly, do you see that he will be acquitted, that he will be, this case will be dismissed? He'll be off. Two questions. That was the second.
Okay. Yeah, Ali, you've been unmuted. You should be able to talk. Go right ahead.
I'm muted now. Okay. Ammon Bundy, I'll tell you what, he has stood up very good during the whole thing. He's been very spiritual, he has actually, the ones that have been despondent, Ammon Bundy has picked up spiritually and emotionally. I'm friends with Lisa Bundy on Facebook, and she put out, she said his last phone call, he is depressed. He hasn't had any letters for a week. You can go on Facebook and get his address, his jail address, and write him letters. Okay, these P3s, they need this very much. Yeah,
sure.
You can go on Facebook, and I could give you a place to find all the prisoners, all the P3s, jail addresses. So before I come on the show tonight, I had most of this written down in Word, so I could refer to it when I was telling the story. But I turned around, I uploaded this into a RTF file, and I said, Lisa, I said, here, this is what my report on the Portland hearing. Correct the spelling, and go ahead. And I'm not a letter writer, hon, but go ahead and write this letter and send it to both of them. Like I say, I had the chance to give them both a thumbs up. They didn't know me from Adam, just an old man sitting there. But maybe that'll perk them up a bit. Your second question, I have the distinct feeling. Let me tell you what. After that hearing Monday, I have the distinct feeling that the wheels have been coming off this case since the beginning. They, believe it or not, all their hard evidence has been destroyed, really. Now some judge approved the Facebook evidence. All their evidence is off of Facebook, if you can believe that or not. One of the most important trials in history, and they're going by evidence. Their main evidence is from Facebook. And I have the distinct
circumstantial.
This case is going to come apart at the seams, son. It's going to come apart at the seams.
Well, we did the pendulum on it, and we got that within a month he'll be released. Within a month. Within very soon.
Well, we could hope for that, but Ali, maybe you might want to talk with Jan, because I know you've been talking with him, and get him some information that we can put up on the website. You can get me, and I'll put it up there. I'll create a page or something where we can put the information for anybody who would like to write letters to these
people.
Good idea.
I'll
give us
Jan.
The contact information. We'll put it up there, and I know they can use the support and for people to write them letters.
Yes, yes. They letters, and also they've got a. I forget the term, it's been a long time. So their account they use for candy bars and papers and pens and all this, that they've got a place where you can donate to that also. I'll get Jan.
Get us that information and get it to Jan, and when Jan has it all, he'll get a hold of me, and I'll put a page up, or maybe Carl will put a page up, but we should do something here.
Yes, let me tell you what, I finally got a chance to look into Almond's and Ryan's eyes, and let me tell you what, those men are real. They are very spiritual and they are very knowledgeable. And you once you look in their eyes, you know you're looking into a hero's eyes. And very spiritual. But anyway, y'all get that information to Jan. Thank you. That's a good idea.
Okay. Thanks. All right.
Thank you.
Let's go to next caller here. One more caller we'll take for Brent. Let's see. We got Ed calling in off of VoIP. Go right ahead, Ed.
My comments have to do with the radios.
Okay. All right. Well, hold on a minute. All right. Then we'll end it with Brent. Brent, if you hang around, if you want to hang around, if anybody has any questions or comments for you, you know, you can pipe in. But if you got to go, you got to go. But
thanks
a lot,
John,
for talking with us and
thank you.
Responding to our questions.
My pleasure, John. Thanks.
Okay. And feel free to pipe in if you want to pipe into anything as we go on. You can unmute yourself. Okay, Ed, go right ahead. What did you have?
Okay. The ham community already has a network, and they have the capability of going long distances. It seems to me like it would be a simple extension of our thoughts to make contact with hams in various and sundry places. That's point one. Point two, the radios that we can use without ham licenses are very limited in distance. If you don't have the capability of using repeaters, you're basically limited to your own vicinity.
Well, that's so true. Let me just respond to a couple of those things before we go further. But, one of the things we're doing is to encourage people in their own counties to discover people that are already ham radio operators and introduce them to what we're doing and National Liberty Alliance and the Committee of Safety and their need as a local group, as the grassroots, especially in emergencies, and let those people will make those connections. That'll happen. It seems to be something that will happen naturally anyway. Hang on a minute. Jan on Pennsylvania, you're coming in through the mic here.
Okay, I'll move.
Okay. And the other thing is the radio system that we're looking at, which is a very compact unit, handheld, something that could be carried, something that you could extend it with an extending antenna, something you could do also with maybe in a car with a much more extended antenna. But the key thing is it does have, I believe, five channels. Gerard corrected me, instead of six. But it's got these private channels that you can use locally that, yes, it doesn't go very far. But the thing is if you're in your local vicinity and you want communications with home during bad, hard times or with friends and neighbors, you've got that. And so that's part of it. Also, of course, you can listen in, and that is the key. Most people will be listening in to discover the information that they need to know, what's going on around them and what's going on the other side of the nation and what's going on within their own counties. And all this information is vital information. And at the same time, you also have a channel into what's called the trunk. And the trunk is the 911 system that's set up for emergency services, all kinds of different channels in there, police, fire, and ambulance, and others, rescue, all kinds of things. And So you have that that trunk in there also, so you can know, again, more of what's going on around you. And some of those stations or channels may be local, if there's military in the area. I don't know, maybe they'd be tapped into that stuff. I don't know. But we'll find out more. I'm not educated enough to really expand too much further than what I've already just said, and we'll take it from there. But we're going to do the best we can. And then, of course, look, at this is just one of more, you know, for people who can just afford this one, then that's what they can get. At least they have something. And it's, one, in my opinion, one of the most important ones. But, you know, I know for myself, I would probably want to buy a little more expensive unit also, maybe to have as a base unit in the home. That maybe has some connections to this radio also on the five channels if possible, but nevertheless, it's something we have to figure out for ourselves. But everyone should have a handhold so that they have that communications. Go ahead, Ed. You want anything final you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, the last thing I have to mention is that I met a gentleman in the Tucson Radio Society, and he holds classes that helps people get ham radio. Now, I presume, I don't know, I'm guessing that most areas will have a similar setup where they'll have societies that have people that encourage ham radio operators and give them classes. So I'm just mentioning that.
Right.
That's
yeah,
it.
Everybody, if they have the time, should go get classes, but that should not stop them from buying a ham radio. And especially the hand units we're talking about. Remember, during an emergency, anyone can use it with or without a license. There is no license checking at that point. It's an emergency. But we should know and understand the processes of communications on ham so we're not rude to people and that, we operate in a an organized, consistent fashion. So we should all learn something. And look, for those who don't have the time to get the education, and when they're listening during the emergency or even just listening now and to what's going on, you'll understand and pick up the lingo, so to speak, the process that people speak and how things go, so we don't walk all over each other, that kind of thing. So people will work that out. Okay, thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. Thank you. Jeremiah, go right ahead, Jeremiah.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. Let me ask my question. I guess it's
you're going to have to get a little closer to your mic. It's hard to hear.
Hello, can you hear me?
Much, much better, yeah.
Okay, great. Basically, my question is two questions, really. Well, three. First of all, Brent, is common law the perfection of reason? I'd like to hear what
Brent,
he has to say about that. I want to know if Brent thinks
Brent,
that common law is the perfection of reason.
I do see Brent still here. If you want to answer, star six. If he's
I'm here.
More questions. They're brief.
I'm here now, John.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The phrase perfection of reason is part of the law of the city. It's not part of the law of the land. And that phrase, perfection of reason, is still used by what we call civilians, civil lawyers throughout the world and all of the world, because all of the world is under some form of the code of the civil law, the law of Rome, which is the law of Babylon, codified. Every country in the world except a small handful of English-speaking countries. But they say that the Code of Justinian and every country under the law of the city uses some form of the Code of Justinian, either the German form, the Code of Bismarck, or the French form, the Code of Napoleon. Both of those are the Code of Justinian with a new name put on them to promote a particular political figure. And also, of course, the canon law of the Roman Church is the law of the city. And all three of those, their lawyers boast that their code is perfected reason. Perfected reason. And anciently, in the old ancient world, when the Greeks talked about perfected reason, and of course the Greeks were looking for the perfect man as their statuary and their literature revealed, and reason, the perfect mind, is a part of a perfect man, and they tried to perfect reason. And of course, we like to say that the Latin world and the Greek word are very reasonable. No, they're not reasonable. That's different. They're big on logic and reason. The trouble with them is they focus on that. They focus on logic and reason. And when you focus on logic and reason, and you teach logic and reason, and you say our problem is, as people say today, well, they're not thinking, they're not reasoning, we need to teach people how to think. Once you do that, you've entered the law of the city. You've entered scholasticism, and as Merriman says from Bolthall and Berkeley, he's gone now, as he says, when reason becomes the emphasis, facts have a way of receding from consideration. When reason becomes the emphasis, when logic becomes the all-consuming ambition, facts have a way of receding from consideration. And in our common law, by grand distinction, we are not a law of logic. No. Matter of fact, our common law appears illogical. As one fellow said, L. Stryker, he said, the Irish are logical. The Italians are logical. The French are extremely logical. But English-speaking people have done more for freedom than all of those, and they're more intelligent than the English, show themselves to be more intelligent. But logic will not get us to truth by itself. That's why God says you must pay attention to Him, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. I mentioned a while ago that our Constitution says no fact, not logic, fact, decided by a jury will be questioned in any other place except according to the course of the common law, because our common law is not about logic. Our common law is about facts. We stress facts, because if you stress logic, facts will receive consideration. Let me add one more thing. This is important, and it's important to our culture. In John chapter 1, verse 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Was God, speaking of Jesus Christ, being God. I know people fight about that, but I want to point out this part of it. The word translated word is the word logos. Logos. And the Greek city-states that had the city law, the code of Babylon, the law of Justinian, the civil law, the law of the city, they said that their law was perfected reason, and the word they used in the Greek tongue was logos. Logos. And John comes along and says, Jesus Christ is perfected reason. Logos. That's the Greek word. And Jesus Christ does have a perfect mind. He is perfectly logical, and he is perfectly just. But we are not Jesus Christ. We are not God. And if we try to be God, as the lawyers and the judges and the people in the city law world try to be the law of the city, they try to play God. And that's the difference between us and them. Our common law says we are not God, and our reason is not perfected. Mm-hmm. And because our reason can be hijacked, and because each one of us can make our reason and our logic stand up and beg like a dog, do anything we want it to do. You don't believe it? Go read the opinions of the Supreme Court that justify the baloney I was talking about a while ago, sodomy. And you'll see that they reason through it. I clerked for a state appellate judge one time when I was younger, and he used to give things to me, and he'd say, here's what I want. Write an opinion and justify it. Well, I'd do that. Of course, I liked him, and I thought he was pretty much always right. I can justify right, but you know, law clerks all over the country every day and judges justify wrong just as much. You can do it with logic. Because logic, if it's not based upon fact, will lead you to the wrong conclusion. So we stress in our common law facts. When people say, well, we need to have juries to judge the fact and the law. Well, that's okay to say that, and it's not a bad idea, but understand this. The domain of the jury is without question, nobody's arguing about this, it's facts. And once the facts are decided, the verdict ought to take care of itself. And the jury, you want a jury that really doesn't care what the government says the law is. They just they need to operate on their guts. Give facts. Give a man facts and let him follow his guts, and he'll do a pretty good job. But try to teach a man logic, and you've given him a tool that he'll use to justify anything. You know, men, birds are born to fly. Horses are born to run. Beasts of prey are born to ferocity. Hounds are born to hunt. And they do that, and you can't stop them. You cannot stop them short of killing them from doing that. Well, same thing
I hear you, Brent.
Men.
I hear you.
Same,
I hear you.
Same thing is true of men. I'm going to finish with this. Men are born to think, and you cannot stop them from doing it once they have the facts, especially when their neck is in the noose. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was muted. Thank you, Brent. I appreciate your answer to that. And we've come to the end of our program, so I'm sorry we've run out of time. We're a couple of minutes over already, so we're going to end with that. Appreciate your time with us, Brent, and appreciate everybody coming. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And don't forget, please, that Thursday is the day we meet, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to keep it as short as possible for organizing. Really, it's just coming together and giving an account of where we're at, what we're doing, and at the state levels, and connecting people with people within their states. Because if we don't build these committees of safety, and we don't get the law of the land ultimately down into the grassroots level, with being starting off with the knowledge and the power and the authority of the county sheriff and the chain of command understood by him and the local government. If we don't get that done before the grid goes down, we're going to have some big problems, and we're going to lose our liberty. We're going to lose our Constitution. We're going to lose everything that we've been working on for hundreds of years, our founding fathers started. So please, let's get involved here. Let's get started, and let's get connected. So we'll see you hopefully on Thursday. Okay, thank you, everybody. Have a good evening, and we'll see you next Monday, of course.